I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
One Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. There's no place like home for the CBJ. Blue Jackets won their third straight at Nationwide, beating the Oilers last night 5-4. Matthew Olivier had two goals and an assist in the win. Jackets look to make it three consecutive wins, hosting the New York Rangers tomorrow night at 7. In the NFL Thursday, Travion Henderson's three touchdowns powered the Patriots to a 27-14 win over the Jets. It's the eighth straight win for New England. Week 11 in the league continues Sunday. The Steelers host the Bengals at 1 o'clock, while the Browns welcome the Ravens Sunday at 4:25. We'll join that game in progress after Ohio State men's hoops and Notre Dame. In college football, Ohio State hosts UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. Jerry Lucas is going to ring the victory bell. They'll unveil a statue of Jerry Lucas at the Shot today at 4 o'clock. This update sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Get a holiday loan from BMI FCU and choose a loan amount from $1,000 to $5,000. BMIFCU.org/holiday loan.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
Oh, baby, let's do it live on a Football Friday edition of the program. Bo and the boys for the next three. Did Dan Orlovsky take a shot at your beloved Buckeyes? We'll get into that at 10 o'clock. Tim May coming up at 10:30, as is customary. We will attempt to know the scores at 11 o'clock. That's been going pretty well. NFL, not so much. But the score's been going pretty well. We'll do that at 11 o'clock. Crazy spreads all over college football this weekend. And then, of course, Doug LaMaurice at 11:30. So the bells hit. You get a little juice. It helps. You get a little bit of the goosebumps and all the things that come with it. There will be a team that will come in here on Saturday night for a rare night November game for your Ohio State Buckeyes. And because it's night, there's going to be a lot of juice for this game. My hunch is they'll do drone shows and they will do lights out and they'll do all of the things that they've had planned to do, and a lot of the stuff that they did in the playoff game last year against Tennessee, but they so rarely get the opportunity to do. A team's going to run out of the visiting tunnel. That team's going to have some shade of blue and gold on it, a really beautiful blue, if I do say so myself. They'll run out of that tunnel, and you're going to tee it up, and you're going to play a football game. And would I be shocked if it is a competitive game into the fourth quarter? Yes, I would. This is a 31.5-point spread. But Ohio State isn't really playing UCLA. Next week when we do this show, they're not really playing Rutgers. They're playing something and building towards something much, much bigger. They're building towards a different shade of blue and a different shade of gold in 2 weeks. That's what this is building towards. This Ohio State football program is in the rarest of positions in that the program has accomplished the ultimate success in winning a national championship. This is the, without question, number one team in the country in every poll that matters, and it's not particularly close. They have not played a game since Texas where they were favored by less than a score. And they've only played one where they were favored by less than two scores. Washington. That's it. They have the respect of everybody. They are viewed as the pinnacle of what college football should be. We have Paul Feinbaum on every Thursday, and he reiterates anytime I ask him that Ohio State is the standard. There is no bigger SEC homer than Paul Feinbaum. He says it every time. I ask him about the Buckeyes. They're the standard. They're clearly the number one team in the country. And it's not just about winning games this year. It's about the program and where it sits in the national picture. You are the model. But there is this rare thing that is kind of one only for them, where there's unfinished business. And there's a goal that you haven't been able to check the box to in now four seasons. So you're going to play UCLA on Saturday, and you're going to play Rutgers next week, and you're going to win both in really lopsided fashions. And I would be shocked if either one is a game into the fourth quarter. It'd be a wild disappointment if somehow that was the case. And so they're being judged against themselves. They're being judged when they go best on best in practice. That's what they're being judged. Hell, Ryan Day took the champions grade and upped it to make it more difficult because it was too easy. Too many graded out champions. It's like Harvard throwing out all those A's. That was Ohio State. Too easy. We gotta get this sucker up a little bit. We gotta make this tougher. Why? Because Michigan looms. Because Michigan looms. And so you're going to play a blue and gold team on Saturday, but, and it's good practice, and you'll go through your business, and hopefully you have some situational stuff that will help down the line. But they are at a point in the season, a season that had, in July, we thought had three inflection points: Texas, Penn State, Michigan. The second inflection point didn't end up being that, of no fault of our own, but because of what happened at Penn State. The third inflection point is now the second, and it's 2 weeks out. And that's really what Saturday night is all about. It's about building towards that game and building towards a run to a national title that could propel you with a win over Michigan and a win over Indiana. And now all of a sudden you're talking about immortality. You're playing UCLA on Saturday, but not really, guys. You're not really playing UCLA at all.
Yeah, and I think for the team, for the coaches, for the fan base, kind of the last fun atmosphere you're going to have this season. Like, this will be kind of the last time that this team will be in the horseshoe for an atmosphere that you'll get on Saturday
night.
Probably true. We'll get the night game and everything that you mentioned that comes with it. So I do think it'll be easier for the guys, for the players, for the coaches to get up for all of that, the pomp and circumstance beforehand, certainly having Jerry Lucas ring the victory bell and bring the team in the night. Mm-hmm. Feels a little different, but this is a go about your business game when the boot meets the ball and then there's four zeros on the clock in the fourth quarter. You stay healthy. You can also probably get away with throwing things at the wall, seeing if some stuff sticks. But I would also like in the fourth quarter, and I'll reiterate this at the end of the program, let's get the backups in with some complimentary offense. Like, let's get Lincoln Keenholz in to actually do more than gimmicks and gadgets. Like, this is another opportunity. Next week's an opportunity to be able to see what you can have with your backups when you will need them, likely.
I mean, that's part of a bigger conversation, what you just brought up there at the end. But I wonder if that's even possible now, this late in the season.
You got to do it, like, sometime, is my thinking on that.
I know, but, like, normally you would build that throughout the year, and they haven't done it.
Yeah.
So, like, can you still build complete confidence in your backup quarterback in the middle of November?
Is it building confidence, though, or just getting the reps?
I think it's
and
reps.
Give him the chance.
And
right?
Lincoln is the right quarterback, I think, to do it because it doesn't feel like he lacks in confidence on the field.
No, he does not.
I think it's kind of weird, Bo, with everything you're saying about Ohio State isn't playing their opponent.
Yeah.
They're playing for something else. But I feel like Ohio State has been doing that for the past 2 years, except for maybe one game. And that was the last game of the year, last season, in the regular season.
I'll push
season,
back real quick, though, Bake. I want you to make your point. I'm going to give you that. But, you went to Eugene last year. You went to Happy Valley last year, and you got punched in the mouth in both of those.
You did.
Like, we don't have that this year.
You did, but even in those games, I'm not sure you were playing the opponent. I think you were playing for something bigger along the way. And they knew in both of those games, I think, even if they lost, like if they lost that game at Oregon, they could still get to their end goal. I think the mindset at Ohio State last year and this year has all been, and even Texas. Texas is a huge game, right, to start the year. If Ohio State lost that, it didn't take them away from their goal. So I think the last 2 years, Ohio State has always had this mindset that we're playing for the ring at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I think the only game they didn't do that where they played their opponent was against that team up north last year.
So oh, you I mean think, stylistically?
Yes. I think
I see your point.
You're playing your opponent and it's a matchup, and you've had a couple games like last year you mentioned where talent equates, but I still think Ohio State, in their mindset, they were never playing the opponent. It was always about themselves. They were playing against themselves, and they were playing for something bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, that's some of this is a byproduct of a 12-team playoff, right? I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody whose primarily job is to talk about the National Football League, and I was talking about, they were asking about Ohio State and asked about, you know, the Michigan game and all of that, and I'm like, oh, no, they need to beat Michigan. They need to. And he's like, why? And I said, well, because they've been doing it for 100 years, and it's just what we do. Like, that's it. Like, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten. Like, that's it. And he's like, well, they didn't last year, and they won the national title. Okay, fine. Yes.
That guy doesn't get us.
No, doesn't. But that's also how all of this is so, it's also strange, because if you think about there aren't any talent equate games since Texas. Penn State was close. It didn't go well for them this year, but they are a talent equates operation. You're going to get two back-to-back with Michigan and Indiana, and then you're going to have what should be a step. If you're the one seed, by the way, you could make an argument that that is the toughest road to a national championship, is the one seed. And that's, if you win out, that's what you're going to be. You're going to be number one overall. So they're playing against themselves. They're holding themselves accountable all the while 2 weeks from now. That's what Saturday's about, is a build towards Ann Arbor. Because no one on this air all day long can tell you that there's any fear of anything other than a Buckeye beatdown on Saturday night against UCLA. It's just not in the cards. And we'll get you set for it over the next three, not just the game here in town, but the games around the country. We'll get into those Arlovsky comments as well, if they are justified and what his real truth was on all of that. We're all off and running on a Football Friday. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Way to make sure you don't miss any of your favorite fan shows.
Oh, no.
Download the Fan app, silly.
God damn it, I knew that.
App Store, Google Play, or just scream right at your phone. You can also listen to Buckeye Games. Do it now.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly cloudy skies are expected here for your Friday as temperatures warm up into the upper 50s here for this afternoon. Winds fairly light at about 5 to 10 miles per hour. And then as we head into the weekend, we're tracking even warmer temperatures here for Saturday with highs in the mid-60s. But mostly cloudy skies are expected and a chance for rain showers here as a cold front arrives as we head into the evening. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Are you working? Because we barely are. It's Football Friday.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football and quiet quitting. The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Man, you know how good the guys in the desert are? The number last night?
Jerks.
13.5.
When I saw that.
My God.
When I checked after the Blue Jackets game and saw that, I was like, oh, these guys got drilled by the half.
The hook. They just, for whatever reason this year, they're not doing straight numbers. So obviously they've put it into the algorithm and it's easier for them to win or lose. They don't want pushes. So you never get a 6 anymore. You never get a 7. You get a 7.5. You don't get a 13. You get a 13.5. You get a 14.5. And last night it was 13.5. I do wonder what kept Trevion Henderson off the field so long for Mike Vrabel, other than there's no way he liked Ramondre Stevenson that much. But now it's 2 weeks in a row. Stevenson was hurt last week. Trey went nuts. And now all of a sudden you have the game you have last night with, what's he ends up with? 93 yards and 3 touchdowns total? I mean, yeah, he is who you thought. He's the guy you drafted in the top of the second round. Like, play him, Mike. It's the only criticism you could have of Vrabel this year is what took so long.
I wonder if because it's Mike Vrabel and he's an old school football guy, the guy kind of guy Baker wants as his head coach. Like, he just didn't do something or like some little things. He didn't do it the right way or the Patriot way. And I know he won't call it the Patriot way because I think Vrabel wants to move off of that. But that's what it screamed to me was like Trevion, while he's awesome and a great football player, and you saw that and a great dude, maybe there was just one or two things with his preparation or during the week that he just wasn't getting.
And I think there were, like, did he maybe put a ball on the ground early on? And I don't know if it was fumble, but the Patriots recovered it. And then I do believe there was a blocking assignment, which is crazy because he's one of the best blocking backs we've ever seen at Ohio State. But I think there was a block that maybe he missed, and that kind of, got him. They kind of quit playing him for a little while after that. I was listening to Rothman and Ice yesterday, and they do their Bet 365 segment every day.
Yeah.
And Matty Ice said, I'm looking at Trevion. He was like, 2 touchdowns. I think that sounds good for him. He had a big week last week, and I think it was kind of crazy because the odds were only like plus 260 for Trevion to get 2 touchdowns. I'm going to have to give Maddie some crap for selling Trevion short last night.
Yeah, and it's not like his touchdowns were just walk-ins. He worked for the 2 rushing, and then the one that he caught in the back of the end zone. I mean, you put those on tape.
Yes.
It's an incredible job out of him by kind of navigating his way through the rookie season and then forcing the coaching staff to play him. I mean, the injury helps, but this is the NFL where the opportunities kind of just come out of thin air.
You mentioned Matty Ice. I didn't want to forget this. It was so perfect what he said this week talking about Arvell Reese. And he said, it reminded me of Malik Hooker. And I went, yes. That's exactly what it reminds you of, where you get, I remember getting whispered, it was actually Tim May. I was talking to Tim May early in camp, Malik Hooker, that year when Malik went nuts. And he was like, I'm telling you, Malik Hooker. And that's a little bit how it was with Arvell. It was like, except it was threes. It was like, I'm telling you. And then away you go. And I just want to give him credit for that. He mentioned that. I want to say on Wednesday's show, he mentioned that comparison. That is a really good comparison to explain the Arvell Reese ascension, similar to Malik. So it kind of came out of nowhere a little.
Yeah, it was always funny because you remember when Arvell came in as a freshman, they moved him to defensive end right away. Mm-hmm. Because they thought, man, this guy coming off the edge would be something special. And I don't think that ever worked for him. I don't think he ever picked it up. I don't know if he ever got big enough for that position or whatnot.
Right.
And then they moved him back to linebacker. And you could see it coming last year. Like, they loved Cody Simon, obviously, because he had played for, he was there forever, knew everything, was a team captain. But as that season went on, you saw Arvell start to get on the field more and more and more, and you just knew it was coming for him this year.
And I think for Arvell's first year, he might have been injured for a little bit of it, but also Jim Knowles. Like, I go back to thinking there were so many guys, there are a handful of guys with Jim Knowles who had just never felt like they fit right. But now with Matt Patricia, it seems like they're fitting a little better. And maybe
Threes fought maybe for James. Him. Threes wanted him and Sonny, like, so bad. Just so bad. And it's all working. But I think from a national standpoint, the Maddie comparison was really good with Malik and Arvell. We knew about Arvell around here, but nationally, folks are just, this year, it's like he was a comet, much like how Malik was. I think the New England Patriots are going to be the one seed. They've won 8 in a row. If you pull up their schedule, they have the next several games. This is what they have left. They're at Cincinnati in 9 days, then Giants at home, Bills at home, who they already won in Orchard Park, at Ravens, at Jets, and Dolphins. Even if they lose two of them, they're 13-4. And they don't lose to bad teams. So you could say, well, maybe they lose to the Bills and the Ravens. Okay, fine, but 13-4 is going to do it in the AFC, kids. Like, to win the AFC, I think you're going to have to go through Foxborough, which I didn't think would happen this quickly, but it seems like it has.
I'm also trying to look for the Patriots, and this is for every team in the NFL. There's the stupefying loss of the season, and maybe New England got out of the way week one against the Raiders, but probably in this stretch of games you just mentioned, there's one that, like, that shouldn't have happened.
Could be.
Like, every team that gets bitten like that, and maybe at the end of the season against the Dolphins, where they've already wrapped up the one seed, and they're like, eh, whoever their backup is, go out there and toss it around. But Drake May is legit.
Yes, he is.
And I did not have that. No. I did not have Drake May being this guy right now. What did you guys think of the uniforms last night?
Loved them.
I thought they were really cool. My TV was out of focus at first.
I thought they were great.
Yeah, I thought they looked really good. I mean, I liked them.
I've never really been in love with the iteration of the Patriots uniforms that they've had since the old school 85 Super Bowl uniforms, right? But
the Pat the Patriot. Ooh, yeah.
These ones were pretty nice.
Yeah, they're in the same spot that Denver is in, and Seattle to a lesser degree, where their success comes in a uniform that isn't their best look.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of stuck with them.
This one's pretty good, though.
But I thought this one was really good. Yeah, this one's really clean. I think this is a really good look out of them. You were watching jackets last night. I suppose for a sold-out crowd, that's kind of the Maximus line. Are you not entertained? Is this not what you've come here
for?
My
God.
I mean, God, 9 goals? Like, holy smokes.
I don't know if I'd like to be the person cleaning up the bathrooms, though, at the end of that thing. A lot of nervous stomachs in nationwide, yeah. I'm guessing. Probably a lot of nervous stomachs on that bench, too.
I would say. That's fun, though. I mean, that's it. That's what it's supposed to. You get a game like this. That's fun hockey. And by the way, and I think, Bake, I'll give you full credit. You were one of the first to bring this to attention. Like, that number one line, now Fantilli scored goals in, what, 3 straight? And I think he scored in, like, 5 out of 6. There's something happening there.
I know we don't like this, especially in this town, a gritty town, and the way the Blue Jackets, the very first Blue Jackets that we all fell in love with, they were, you know, a dirty, scrappy team.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, and we can say what we want about Yarmo, but he brought these guys in. Mm-hmm. Yarmo built this team, and it's built for 6-5 games.
It is.
6-4 games. Mm-hmm. And this team, when they open it up, it can be frustrating because you leave your goalie on an island and you'll give up a lot of goals. But this team is built to score a lot of goals. And I think they play best when they're going full out throttle, open throttle hockey.
I mean, Jet was so clutch in moments last night, killing penalty. I mean, you had the two of the best hockey players in the world. Like, they did. It was fun to see Steve Levy and John Tortorella, like, in the studio when they'd cut to them, and they were just talking about how the Edmonton Oilers with Draisaitl coming at you. The little things that, like, Torts can point out in a broadcast is also really cool. Like, The gimmick of Torts being a tough guy and a hard ass kind of overshadows, I think, a little bit just how intelligent he is of a hockey person. It kind of trickles through in the broadcast a little bit, but like when he was sitting there just trying to break down like little things that Z did, like with his stick out when you had Draisaitl like up at the top left corner, like all of that was really good. And Baker, to your point about these being 6-5 hockey games, that's, I think, the best thing for this fan base. Do more of those, especially if you're winning games at home.
I think it's pure joy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fun. It's fun. I mean, it's up and down. It's fun. And they've got the skill for it. They do. And just wait. I mean, these guys are all kids.
This pair of Fantilli and Marchenko.
Yeah.
Guys, let's
buckle in.
Enjoy this. This is 10 years of this with those two at the top of this lineup.
The Marchenko thing is something nobody planned for this great, this quick, great period.
He's playing so good.
He is. Fantilli was the prince who was promised. So him becoming this now it's really cool to see. Go ahead, Bake. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Marchenko, a second round pick, and JD, when he was on the broadcast Monday talking about that, or Tuesday, whichever, yeah, it was Monday, him talking about that, saying that, I forget who they ended up picking in that draft in the first round, But they said they liked both of them equally, and they wanted them both. And the scouts said, well, we think we could get Marchenko in the second round, so pick this guy in the first round. Hell of a risk that paid off, but...
Whew. Man, yeah. Well, they need a little hockey luck, little puck luck for the Jackets. It's been 20 years of not getting much of it, so it's nice to have it when it falls in your direction. Buckeyes back at home on Saturday night. They are playing UCLA, but they are judged against themselves. You'll hear from Ryan Day on that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up,
you? Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Football Friday. Your number one ranked Ohio State Buckeyes hosting UCLA tomorrow night at the Shoe. 7:30 kick between the Buckeyes and the Bruins. We'll have you covered all day today and all day tomorrow. It starts at noon with Fan Sports Saturday with Reese and Thidoff. Then 2 to 4, the Fan Tailgate Show with Maddie DeVere and Dane. 4 to 6, the pregame show with AR, Tim, and Bids. And then, of course, the Ohio State Sports Network pregame show. And then the kickoff at 7:30. Then the extended postgame coverage with Beam and Zwicky coming up after that. So that's what you have to look forward to tomorrow. Reese made a good point in the opening segment in terms of you got two more chances to see this team in town if things go according to plan. Your playoff games will not be at home if things go according to plan. They will be in neutral sites. And so you have two more chances to see this team play. This is very likely to be your last chance to see this team play at night. Those are rare instances anyway. You had the Ohio game, and now you have this one, which should be a lot of fun. The atmosphere should be great. I think the weather's going to be pretty good as well. The reality is that this is an outmatched, overmatched, overwhelmed opponent that you're playing. And so for Ryan, the trick of this is to make sure that you're being judged not by who you play, but rather by what you do in practice throughout the week. He addressed that this week in terms of the intensity that he's trying to continue to keep ratcheted up.
The goal is for the intensity to continue to increase. Now, there's times during the season where we'll cut out some periods. We may try to shorten practice, but we never want the intensity to go down at all. So, you know, for instance, like this week, you know, we typically we have four plays of inside drill. We did three, and that's on Tuesday, you know. But the intensity should never change at all, and that's what we're looking for, especially with good on good. You know, on walkthroughs, okay, now we have to be as intense mentally with our focus, but not as much physically as the season goes on. You know, those reps can add up on you. But when we're going good on good in practice, we want the intensity to always be the same.
The other thing Ryan did this week was he made it public that he upped the champion grade. And this is just one of those things where too many guys were grading out, and you have to lift the standard even amidst overwhelmed opponents. He was asked why he did that. Here was his answer.
We just felt like we needed to turn up the volume a little bit the last week, and so we went from 80 to 83. And you might think that's a big deal, like, or, you know, it may not sound like a big deal, but it is. You know, from 80 to 83 is a big deal, and so, you know, but that's what we're striving for. We want to be the best in what we do, and so there was a couple guys that graded in the 81, 82, you know, right in that range, but it wasn't quite there. And for us to be champions and to reach our goals, we have to get to that point. So that's the idea behind it. I think the guys, but the important thing is they buy into it. I think our guys really buy into it. They understand how important it is. So, you know, whatever type of game it is, if it's always about us, it's about the grading. And then it's the coach's job to make sure that the criteria is accurate and that they're grading it, you know, and being real about it. And so something that really we take serious around here.
He's playing psychological jiu-jitsu, isn't he? I mean, that's where he's at. He's having to do it because of what's become of these opponents. It's a masterclass in motivation and psyche, how to prepare players, how to prepare individuals, how to get them to ignore opponent and be your best. It's rare around here. We haven't had a whole lot of these. I was on with Bone and Tyvus earlier before we started the show, and we'll get into the Orlovsky stuff coming up in Learned and Earned coming up at 10 o'clock. But one of the things that we were discussing was, why can't we just enjoy this greatness? Well, we are enjoying the greatness. We are. But typically, when you have greatness like this, there are a couple of instances throughout the schedule where there are pushback from opposition. When is the last time, I mean, has this team trailed in the third quarter all year?
No, I don't believe so.
I mean, I just said that kind of like Burgundy at the end of Anchorman saying goodbye to San Diego. I mean, that's kind of how I said it because I wasn't entirely sure.
I believe
did they trail at all in the Texas game in the third quarter?
No, because they were up 14 to nothing. First. Yeah, I want to say, Bo, and I'll need to go back to that Texas game and look at this, but I want to say
it was 7-0 at half against Texas.
Yeah, so the closest game they've had at half was Penn State.
Yep.
On the scoreboard, at least.
Right, but that's the one where if you don't fumble, you're up 24-7.
7-3 in Washington. Do I have that right?
Trailed?
No, led.
Okay, so when is
that might
what
be
is
right,
the latest in a game they trailed?
They've
all
only,
year.
I believe they've only
look what
let
we're
the
doing.
Other team score first twice.
So
do you see the problem? This is why he's amping up Champions Grade. No, you never trailed in the Washington. It was
never trailed
7-3 and a half.
They trailed in the Purdue game. They were down 3-0 until the second quarter. Then they scored 24 unanswered.
Did you trail in the Grambling game? Did Grambling? No, Grambling didn't score.
I mean, look what we're
was
doing.
Was it Ohio? Did Ohio score? Minnesota scored first, I believe. Minnesota took their opening drive and kicked a field goal.
It was 20-3 at Illinois at half. Wisconsin 17-0 after the first quarter.
Yeah, Minnesota, you trailed 3-0. You answered that. You were up 7-3 after one. Yeah, it's not.
So that's it. So the biggest, the only time this year, the latest in a game they've trailed is the opening drive.
Well, they trailed the second quarter last week at Purdue. They were down 3-0.
Okay, second.
So
okay,
that was it.
But that scored on the opening drive. Okay, so second quarter, start of the second quarter against Purdue is the latest in a game that this team has trailed.
Yeah.
We've been playing football here for 120-some years. We don't even have a point of reference for this. And there's a bunch of factors to it. It's possible that this team is just that great, that they are. And I think that that's in play. I've said since week one, best team, highest ceiling. Best team, highest ceiling. And that stands now. So that's a part of it. Some of it is what's happened to the middle of the Big Ten. That's part of it, too, like what happened to Penn State and so forth. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like this, though, around here, where the latest you've trailed in a game. We are November 14th, and the latest that you were trailing in a game was the second quarter against Purdue?
Yeah, a lot of unprecedented stuff this season, because I'm also trying to wonder if Ohio State's ever played two teams, maybe not even one team, where the coach has been fired midseason. But this will be the second team Ohio State faces this year, where the coach was dismissed midway through the thing. Actually, Deshaun Foster was gone, it feels like, years ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, you mentioned and Purdue ends up 34-10. That could have been 51-3.
You scored 24. Yeah. You were down 3-0 going into the second quarter. You scored 24 in the second quarter.
24 in the second. So, I mean, it's 17-14 against Penn State at half because of the Donaldson fumble. You score in the first possession of the third quarter, you're out of harm's way immediately.
I mean, it's worse for Purdue if Julian Sain doesn't throw that interception. I mean, he's at four touchdown day then.
Yeah, and he just forced that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. So that's why Ryan's doing what he's doing. That's why he's playing psychological warfare with his own team. That's why he's taking the Champions Grade, because otherwise he can't show up there every Sunday at the facility and go, well, 27 of you graded out champions. He's doing the same damn thing we're doing. We're comparing them to fictional opponents that they may see down the road. He's doing the same thing in the building. He's judging them. He's up the standard to make it more difficult for them to achieve greatness because they've already achieved all of it. Even though, in the words of him, they've achieved nothing, which is his point. We haven't beat Michigan, haven't won the Big Ten, haven't won the Natty.
And, Bo, I don't think you can do that if you're just going out and getting, you know, the highest bidder. right? You're getting the players that want the highest bidder. You can't do that unless you're getting the right guys here that are here for the right reason. Yeah, do they want money? Sure. And do they want to get compensated for what they're doing? Absolutely. But I'm also sure there's probably a handful of schools that would give Jeremiah Smith more than you're giving him. There's probably some schools out there that would give Caleb Downs more than you're giving him. There's probably some schools out there that offered Carnell Tate a whole hell of a lot of money to leave you and come be their number one receiver. You cannot do this without this culture and foundation that they're building and grabbing the right type of guys. Not only really good players on the field, but really good off of the field 100%. As well.
Yeah, that's why what I said off the top with the respect that everybody in the country has for what they've built here. It's the standard. It's the standard. And it's unique kind of unto itself at this point. Coming up next, we'll get you set. Regional semifinals in high school football, plus the Browns and the Bengals back to work on Sunday. Get you set for all of that coming up next here on a Football Friday edition. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
The Fan.
Bills piling.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Hello, Big Voice Guy here. I've been hired to tell you all about The Fan's YouTube channel. Did you know you can immerse yourself in Buckeye goodness like Austin and Burb's daily podcast, The Beat? Yes, sorry, Bob. Subscribe today.
Hey, it's Bobby Kerber.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Hotline is sponsored by Carpenter Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electric, and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
We'll read your emails on the air, but we won't tell you where to send them. Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
National Football League on to week 10 this week. Bengals and Steelers, Ravens and Browns. Bengals Steelers go first, then Ravens and Browns go second. An odd 425 tip, kickoff rather, for the Ravens and Browns. High school football tonight. We're at the regional semifinal stage of it. Bake, you'd be more locked in on this than either Reese or I would be. But how about that bracket of the Olentangies where they all had to play each other? And now you get Orange and Liberty tonight at 7. That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty fun, and it just goes to tell you how much talent is up there in that Lewis Center heading towards Delaware area of the state right now and how booming that is. Olentangy Orange. Obviously, Liberty won the state championship last year. They got off to a slow start this year because they lost a lot of those guys. Olentangy Orange is going to be tough to beat with Levi Davis, who's going to go be a Bobcat, play his college football there, but he's a heck of a track guy, a heck of a basketball player too, was on that Orange team that won the state championship this past year. So that's going to be a fun game tonight.
Somebody needs to do a study on whoever is in charge of athletic development in that region, because to win state lacrosse, state basket, and they're different schools, right? Like Liberty won, I think last year, won 2 years ago, won lacrosse, then they won football. Orange won basketball, and now maybe they'll win football. Just the idea that, like, it's crazy amount of athletic talent and development. Like, someone deserves a ton of credit for what they're doing up there.
Well, and Olentangy won baseball. Remember, they had the sweep of the big sports in Division One this past year, and then that Liberty won hockey 2 years ago as well. So
that's right. Yeah, that's nuts. A couple other, I mean, everything's good at this point. Arlington and Pick Central, that's mammoth. Reese, you going out to Pickerington?
I won't be going to Pickerington. But if UA does win, or when UA wins, I think Upper Arlington gets to plant the flag at both North and Central.
Because the Bears will be the kings of
the Bears ran through North last week, and Central's the victim tonight.
If they do win, maybe next week they'll be a little closer, and you could head to that one. Maybe.
Where would the regional final be?
I think it all depends, right, on you know who wins what games and who wants to host. The first thing I thought of was DeSales, and then the second thing I thought of was Westerville Central. So I know both of those are usually sites here in Central Ohio. So
yeah.
Maybe it'd be Crew Stadium. Who knows?
Speaking of DeSales, this is probably the game of the this is the marquee game of the night, probably in all of Ohio high school football. Massillon coming to town to take on DeSales. RJ Day, of course, thrilling game last week where they win it with on the last play, hosting a Massillon team that's just an unmitigated juggernaut. I have no earthly clue why Massillon is in Region 7. I mean, I think I know why.
Yeah, how does that end up?
My hunch is because they don't want them playing Hoban in a regional final. That's my guess. And I guess you got to move somebody from up there down here, but that is absurd. Like, it's a long ways from DeSales to Massillon. So I don't know. But that's a crazy one. That the Massillon machine is nuts. It's really nuts. They're one of the only, I think, publics who can match the privates in everything they do in Ohio, like facilities, all of it. When NIL becomes a component, absolutely.
Well,
like, they're going to check all those boxes.
They beat the Bengals because they have an indoor.
They do. They've had an indoor for like 15 years. They've had an indoor up there. Yeah. So that's fun. That is more fun than probably what you're going to get out of the two NFL games. I do think Bengals and Steelers, let's do that one because that's the one that really matters in terms of postseason. This has to be a must win for Cincinnati. It has to be. There is no scenario where dropping to 3-7 is means anything from Joe Burrow in terms of playing meaningful games. So they've got to go to Pittsburgh and win. They're 5.5-point dogs. Both you and I picked them to cover it. Joe's already thrown a little bit. Zach was asked earlier this week if he could tell that Burrow was coming off of injury. Here's what he had to say.
No, not from a throwing perspective. I mean, everything was in the pocket. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't 11-on-11, so he wasn't required to move. He did his normal movements, threw the ball nice. And so for now, that's where we're at. You know, like I said, we're not doing any 11-on-11. We'll have a really good progression plan for him as part of his rehab, and we'll go from there.
They got to win. You got to go to Pittsburgh and win. If you drop to 3-7, then you're not, by the time Burrow Pat comes back, we're just playing for stats at that point.
Because you're also separating in the AFC North if you're the Steelers, mm-hmm. and you do get that win. Like, and I wonder, if it goes poorly for the Bengals, does Burrow still stick with the Thanksgiving Day game? Does he still stick with that return? Like, it doesn't feel like Burrow would come out and say that, right, and then kick back on it and be like, well, no, I'm not actually going to do that. But yeah, I was thinking yesterday making the pick, like maybe they get that boost knowing that if they can get this, and I think I've said like three of the Bengals games are must win already this season, so I'm not doing that. But if they can get this, then it shortens the gap between them and Pittsburgh. It's probably Baltimore. Everybody's going to be chasing here in a couple weeks for the AFC North. But you had made the point yesterday where that's only Cincinnati's only path is to win the division. Really, I guess I feel like when we get to Thanksgiving, we're going to say that about the other two teams in Baltimore and Pittsburgh. If you're going to make the playoffs, you got to win the North. That's it.
At the start of the season, Reese, I think we all thought maybe we two or three out of the North.
Yeah.
I think you're one. I think whoever wins the division, now I think Baltimore is going to go on a run here. I mean, if you look at their schedule, it's really in play for them to maybe lose one more the rest of the way. They're 4-5. Even if they lost 2, 10-7 would probably get it done because Pittsburgh's bigly flawed. They play the Browns up in Cleveland. It's an odd 4:25 start for this one. I don't know. And it's crazy because the afternoon window is loaded. That's when Chiefs and Broncos is being played, and that's also when Rams and Seahawks is being played. So I don't know why this game is a 4:25 start up there, but it's a tough matchup, obviously. And obviously the Browns went status quo with everything. They're going to run it back, same quarterback, same coordinators, all of it. I actually thought if you're looking for, trying to find positives in a otherwise really absurd loss to the Jets last week, I did think Tommy Reese calling plays gave them a little something. For example, he unlocked Jerry Jeudy a little bit, something that hadn't happened previously. Here's Kevin Stefanski on Reese's first game calling plays.
Yeah, I thought Tommy, and I would credit Tommy and the entire offensive staff, Mary Kay, I thought they did a really nice job in the game, both leading up to the game and then in game, and some of the conversations that they had and some of the adjustments throughout the game that you're making, whether personnel or scheme or otherwise. There's always calls you want back and that type of thing, but I thought he did a real nice job along with the staff and operating.
Yeah, it's a tough sled for the Brownies taking on that Ravens team that's now hitting on every single cylinder. We'll do college football learned and earned. Second hour of the program, Tim May coming up at 10:30. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip.
And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan.
Gift big this.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
From the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. Number one Ohio State hosts UCLA tomorrow night at 7:30. Buckeyes are 31.5 point favorites. We'll have that game on The Fan with coverage starting Saturday at 2 p.m. OSU will host Rutgers next Saturday. Kickoff time for that is still TBD. On the field tonight, number 20 Louisville hosts Clemson at 7:30. At 9 o'clock in Eugene, number 9 Oregon takes on Minnesota. In the NFL last night, the Patriots beat the Jets 27-14. Travion Henderson had 3 touchdowns in the win. It's the 8th straight victory for New England. Week 11 continues Sunday morning in Spain. As the Dolphins play the Commanders at the Bernabeu, it'll be a 9:30 a.m. kick from Madrid. And in the NHL last night, the Blue Jackets beat the Oilers 5-4. Matthew Olivier had 2 goals and an assist in the win. CBJ looked to make it 3 straight, hosting the New York Rangers tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. This update is sponsored by Whiskey War by High Bank Distillery. Drink local. Drink High Bank.
Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Tim May coming up in 29 minutes from now. Between now and then, time for a little college football learned and earned.
Bishop and Friends present Learned and Earned. What we learned this week and who's earned a drink.
Sponsored by Go Brewing. Visit GoBrewing.com/the fan and claim your buy one, get one free 6-pack of Go Brewing.
And our favorite nominee gets a 6-pack of non-alcoholic beer from our friends at Go Brewing. You can do so on the X platform at 971BFS or also in the YouTube chat, and we will track those down and get you that 6-pack. Reese, you could take the lead on this one because this one takes a little bit of explaining in regard to College Game Day will be at Notre Dame in Pittsburgh tomorrow. It's the biggest game they've had on campus in a minute. They're ranked 22nd in the country. Notre Dame comes in ranked number 9. Obviously, Notre Dame has no margin for error, and that kind of sets up what has been kind of a weird week for Pat Narduzzi, Reese.
To say the least. I think every season since Narduzzi's taken over at Pitt, he's stuck his foot in his mouth, and I don't know if this is that. They're playing the game at Acrisure Stadium, so I know Pat McAfee's got his circus in town. They're going to have College Game Day there tomorrow from the home of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hopefully, they figured out the field turf there. We had talked earlier this week about the Pittsburgh Panthers still being very much in the mix with only one conference loss for an appearance in the ACC championship game. So here's Pittsburgh Panthers head coach Pat Narduzzi being asked earlier this week, I think this was Monday, if the game tomorrow at noon against Notre Dame was a must win.
Absolutely not. It is not an ACC game. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not an ACC game. I gladly get beat 103 or 110 to 10 in that game. They can put 100 up on us as long as we win the next two after that. But again, our focus is on Notre Dame and getting as many wins as we can.
And so I think everyone with a college football property, or I guess a college football platform, had comments about Narduzzi's comments. And I took it as mental gymnastics. Like you were talking about in the last hour with Ryan Day and having to ratchet up the requirements to be graded a champion because you've got to figure out how to get your team through this. And I think for Narduzzi, it might be a similar attempt.
Okay, before we get to the various luminaries who are commenting on this, I think this is an example of a coach being honest, which is what we want from our coaches, right? We want them to be honest. I think probably he'd like to have it back, and I know we'll get to him explaining his comments. I'm sure he'd like to have it back, but I think what you're getting is our objective is different now than it used to be. My objective is to win my conference, because if I win my conference, I can make the playoff. And if I make the if I win the conference and make the playoff, then I get to keep my job for a really long time. And I think that's what he's saying. And I'm sure he would like to have that part back. How did you read it, Bick?
So he's right in what he's saying and the fact that, hey, this isn't a conference game. We can still accomplish our goals even if we lose this.
Yeah.
He's totally wrong and going way over the top saying, I don't care if we lose 100-0 because I guarantee you his players will have a different story on Sunday and Monday if they lose 100-0 because he sure is going to damn care.
Well, so if he loses 100-0, imagine his post game. Like if Notre Dame houses him, like that's no fun.
And he will, Pat Narduzzi, be a guest on Pat McAfee's show today, and so I know he'll be asked about it. He's been asked about it, I think, every time he's been in front of a microphone this week. But to Baker's point, let's hear from Urban Meyer, who on the Triple Option podcast was asked about Narduzzi's comments.
He's not right. I'm saying that. I know Narduzzi really well. That's AI. He didn't say that.
He did say
it. He didn't say that.
That's
AI. He didn't say that.
There's video of him saying it.
No, that's AI. That's that fake stuff.
No, he said it, bro.
What the hell are you talking about?
McDonald driving around.
It doesn't matter. A game that you're playing doesn't matter.
At Notre Dame. Yeah.
No, it's in Pittsburgh.
Oh, it's in Pittsburgh. Well, I did talk to him.
But it doesn't matter, right?
I talked to him, and that's a great football coach, man.
Oh, for sure.
Intense sucker. I'm telling you, it's AI. I don't believe it.
He said it. He didn't say it. He said it.
He's going to be playing his ass. His team's going to be playing their ass off the window.
Now, for sure they are.
What are you talking about?
And Rob Stone, when he introduced the cut, had kind of echoed similar sentiments of, yeah, they don't need to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the coach in Urban was like, what the hell are you talking about, man? This is AI.
I think there's a 63% chance Urban really thinks it's AI.
Probably.
I really think so. I think that he probably thinks that. And I've been fooled on it. Like, the AI is getting so good so quick that I get fooled on it now. Is what happens. It's so convincing. We have Joel Klatt on this as well.
Yeah, Joel Klatt on his podcast gave comments.
I did not love Pat Narduzzi's comments talking about this game. If you have not heard this, Pat Narduzzi, the head coach at Pitt, basically was asked about like this game and its level of importance versus the ACC games, because obviously they're still in the ACC hunt. And he said, I don't care if we get beat by 100. We just have to win our ACC games, basically saying like this game doesn't matter. I'm like, why would you put that in your players' heads? What are you talking about? Like, be a competitor. What do you mean? There's a game. There's lines on the field. There's a scoreboard. Play your butt off. Period. I don't understand some of these coaches. They literally throw excuses towards their teams. Here you go. Don't play well. It'll be fine. I don't get it. I don't understand it at all.
I don't think it's that. I'll get you what I think it is in a second. But we do have Narduzzi trying to explain it, right?
This was yesterday.
Go ahead.
Every game's big. They're all, must wins, if you want to say it. But they got to make plays in every game. And to me, it's about execution, one play at a time. And if you treat it any different, and again, I'm assuming they will. That's why I've got to tell them not to. They're going to be excited. They're going to be, like I said, I think that's why we've had, an outstanding week of practices, because they're excited. And, I might have mentioned this on my radio show. I don't remember mentioning some of Kyle Lewis played out of his mind on Tuesday. I'm like, it ain't game day today. Slow down. Like, that guy was the best practice he's had all year. Guys are excited. They're going to play up. We got to be smart. And, as Coach Junko always said, saw that wood. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Stay right in the middle and saw some wood. So, to me, it's kind of how you have to go approach these games. And I'll have to calm them down a little bit because I know they'll be excited.
This is the first time I've heard saw that wood.
Yeah. Usually chop wood. Yeah. Is the way that goes.
Keep swinging. That's what we say around here. Keep swinging.
Keep swinging. Yeah. Bake, I'm sure, is chewing on nails with all of this, but this is a byproduct of a 12-team playoff. That's what it is. That's why, what else is a byproduct of a 12-team playoff? What Indiana is doing in the non-conference schedule going forward. You know what else is a byproduct of a 12-team playoff? What Penn State did a couple of years ago, and they said, we don't want to play Ohio State and Michigan every year because we want an easier path to the playoff. These coaches, there's a shift that's happened, and it sucks. And I don't like it, and I know most of you out there don't like it. For 100-some years in this sport, every single Saturday mattered. Every one. We have shifted to an NFL model where every single Saturday doesn't. It doesn't. Most do. Most do. We are sitting here in a town, the home of the national champions. Ohio State lost twice last year and won the national championship, including losing to Michigan. You think one of those John Cooper teams wouldn't have loved that? You think Eddie George in 95 wouldn't have had like in a run at a 12-team playoff? How about 98? I think 98 Ohio State wouldn't have, how about 15? Think they wouldn't have loved a 12-team playoff? But that's not what the sport was in those days. It's what it is now, and I think that's what that's where Narduzzi gets into trouble here, because he told you the real truth. The real truth is it doesn't matter if they lose to Notre Dame. It doesn't. It matters if they lose 103 to nothing. He was just, you know, beating a dead horse with that. But it doesn't matter if they lose to Notre Dame. Not if they win their last two games, because then they'll win the ACC and then they're going to the dance. And it sucks, but this is the reality of where we are with the sport.
And it's important to note, I think the last two games are Georgia Tech and Miami.
Yeah.
So both of those are top 20 teams. Georgia Tech's ranked 16th. Sure. And both of those, well, actually, Miami's got two losses in the play, but Georgia Tech right now is sitting in the top spot in the Atlantic Coast Conference at 8-1.
And yeah, let me push back on this just a little bit as I think of this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter in the fact that, yeah, you could still go win the ACC, but it does matter if you don't win the ACC, right? Because a win over Notre Dame could help possibly get you in. Now, Pitt, probably not getting in from the ACC with three losses, right?
No.
But in the future, like, this could matter. Yeah. Every game matters.
It matters to Notre Dame.
Yeah. So he is correct in the fact that it doesn't matter for that, but there's going to come a time where maybe you're knocking on that door and this loss could keep you from being in at large. So
for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's it, the circumstances that they're in right now, though. It doesn't. His overall point is correct, that it doesn't. Do you have an earned and learned that you'd like to give out today, Reese?
Well, I kind of just want to give it to Pat Narduzzi, because
ship him a six pack.
Regardless of what happens, I think he's going to need a drink anyway.
Bold move, Cotton.
Because if they win, yeah, you'd be partying, you know, yeah, at least for a day. Because he does feel like the kind of coach that would, win or lose, have his team ready for Georgia Tech. And that's the most important thing, because yeah, that is an ACC game. But if they lose, and I don't know if they'll get blown out by Notre Dame, but if they lose, yeah, you're probably going to be hearing it from just about everybody, because you didn't have your team prepared, because you weren't focused on them, you were focused on the ACC. So it's like, you can't win if you're him.
I do think two people we should just like recognize here before the segment. One is Wisconsin. I think that was it's been a tough year for Luke and for them to get a win over Washington. Mm-hmm. Washington has their issues on the road. But hey, Luke, you're not in the basement of the Big Ten anymore. So that's nice. You're at least on the bottom step. And Indiana, you can say what we want about that game. First time they've ever won in Happy Valley. That's huge.
Absolutely is. And those two teams meet on Saturday. And I think Indiana is like a 28.5-point favorite in that game.
Woof.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dan Orlovsky had some comments earlier this week about your Ohio State Buckeyes and the notion of dominance. Are they the least tested number one team in history? We will play that for you and actually look in to see if he maybe has a point. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishman Friends, right here on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keels calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Berm are back with a new daily podcast, the ultimate OSU football insiders. You know, it's refreshing to have some smart people working here from time to time.
The Beat with Austin and Berm on the 10 TV Plus app.
Subscribe today.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We're looking at a mix of clouds and sunshine here for your Friday afternoon as temperatures warm up into the upper 50s. Winds fairly light at about 5 to 10 miles per hour.
And then as we head into the weekend, we're tracking even warmer temperatures here on Saturday with highs in the mid-60s. But a cold front will arrive and bring us a chance for rain showers and then cooler conditions here as we head into Sunday. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
It's Friday and there's football. I shall call it Football Friday.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for all things football. The Fan. Connect with the show on X at 971BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. Holidays coming up. $99 is where it starts for Buckeye Jewelry, the official jeweler of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Check them out, and they will take care of you, Sawmill and Easton. All right, Dan Orlovsky, this was on Get Up. On Ohio State.
The least tested number one team in the history of college football, they've played nobody. I mean, week one, Texas. Ever since then, they haven't played anybody. I don't know if they played a team that's ranked right now since Texas. They have been trailing for 1 second in the second half this year. We have no idea who this Ohio State team, very good team, quarterback's a really good player. Jeremiah Smith's best player in college football. We have no idea who Ohio State is, like down four in the fourth quarter.
So is there anything to be outraged about that? Isn't that all true?
Yeah, no. There's nothing there.
I know that we want to yell at things, but I don't know that all of that's true. We went over this. Like, they haven't trailed. They haven't trailed since the start of the second quarter against Purdue. That's the latest into a game that they've trailed all season. So that all of that's true. Now, to say they haven't played anybody, it's not their fault. And that would probably be the qualifier I would give. They did play Texas, and that was the number one team in the country when you beat them. They did play Penn State. Penn State was the preseason number two. So he should have some context on that in the statement. But he does have a point, and it goes to a conversation we had earlier in terms of just how easy all of this is. But in terms of the least tested number one in history, here are the three best college football teams that I've seen in my lifetime. Most dominant college football teams that I've seen in my lifetime. The first one is number one in my book, and it's 95 Nebraska. Reese, I'm not even sure if you were born. 95 Nebraska. 95 Nebraska's closest game was a 35-21 win in Lincoln against Washington State. Okay? So here's their schedule. At Oklahoma State, 64-21. At Michigan State, 50-10. Arizona State, 77-28. Pacific, they were nice, 49-7. Washington State, 35-21. Missouri, 57-0. Number 8, Kansas State, 49-25. Number 7, Colorado, 44-21. Iowa State, 73-14. Number 10, Kansas, 41-3. Oklahoma, 37-0. And they beat Florida in the national title, 62-24. That's the most dominant team of my life, is that one. The other ones that you oftentimes get mentioned are 0-1 Miami. I saw this team in person. I was at the game. They beat Florida State 49-27. That ended Florida State's consecutive home win streak. That team, the closest game they had, there was a late game at Lane Stadium in Blacksburg where they beat Virginia Tech 26-24 and survived. That team had wins against number 13 Florida State, 49-27. They had a win against number 15 Syracuse, 59-0. They had a win against number 11 Washington, 65-7. Then they had the struggle against Virginia Tech, and then they blew the brakes off of Nebraska, 37-14. The third one that is most dominant number one is LSU Burrow. Okay, so they start that year ranked sixth. They beat Texas in a close one, and this is when they kind of served notice, 45-38. Then in terms of ranked teams that they played number 7 Florida and won 42-28. They played number 9 Auburn and won 23-20. Number 3 Alabama, 46-41, a classic. They really hit their stride down the stretch, though. In the playoff, they beat, in the SEC title game, they beat number 4 Georgia, 37-10. They beat Oklahoma, number 4 in the playoff semifinal, 63-28. And then they beat number 3 Clemson, 42-25 in the national championship. Game. So that's the best team for in recent years is 2019 in terms of most dominant best. And they won everything. I mean, they won the Heisman, everything. They won everything you could win at LSU that year. And I do think that Ohio State matches up of those three teams. They probably match up most closely with 0-1 Miami in terms of to this point, the schedule that they've played and who they've beaten. Because the 0-1 Miami schedule, there's nothing on there that's terrifying. I mean, they didn't play a team that was ranked in the top 10 in the country until Nebraska at the end of the year. Everybody else was ranked in the teens. So that's probably the closest doppelganger for this Ohio State team is that one.
I've never been a fan of they ain't played nobody when you do have ranked, you have wins over ranked opponents on your schedule, because you are not responsible, in my opinion, for what other teams are doing.
No.
Or what other teams have done up to the point where they got to you. Because Texas was the number one team in the country by a lot of votes. Put the Longhorns number one over Penn State. And so going into the season, those were your two, those were your, the two biggest games in the country in their respective windows at the respective times when you looked at this thing. And you said, all right, then there's the Michigan game. So Ohio State's got three major hurdles to clear. And week one, Ohio State shut down Texas. And what was supposed to be a vaunted Longhorns offense with Arch Manning. Like, holding that against Ohio State is bonkers. I mean, holding it against any team. Getting a win over the number one team in the country and the Heisman Trophy favorite going into the season, again, should not be held against anybody. The fact it's being done against Ohio State is, again, to me, ludicrous.
I think the thing, I think the thing here that I would say to Dan Orlovsky is you kind of made your start in this business by just being a dude that knows ball and watches ball and breaks down. Hey, this guy's really good at this. This guy's really good at that. And I think what most people say about this Ohio State team is, man, you just sit down and watch them. They do everything better than everyone else. They're just the best team in the country.
Yeah.
And I understand what he's saying, and he's not wrong. But I'm pretty sure if you just looked at him and said, hey, you sit here, watch, you watch the games, you watch ball, who's the best team at doing everything? He's going to be like, well, it's Ohio State.
And I think he did say that. This is not Ohio State being disrespected. Ohio State is the number one team in the country. It's not particularly close. They're favored over everybody on their schedule. They're favored hypothetically over everybody in college football. They have two of the four or five favorites for the Heisman Trophy. They're favored by 31.5. This is not, there's no disrespect for Ohio State. I think what he's going for here is, I don't know what's going to happen if slash when they get punched in the mouth. Now, they might be like 95 Nebraska and never get punched in the mouth. And then you're talking about Pantheon team. Then you're talking about 25 Ohio State is with 95 Nebraska, with 01 Miami, with 19 LSU as the greatest teams in the modern game. That's what you're talking about if they do it. But because of, and we've talked about this ad nauseum. Think about what we, think of the mental gymnastics we do every single Monday to try to find something that they're not good enough at. Like we talk about short red zone or, they can't run it when they know they're going to run it, all this stuff. The latest they've trailed in a game is the start of the second quarter against Purdue. They've never been in danger. So I think we're all curious. I don't want to see them ever in danger. Don't want to. I hope they're 95 Nebraska and they beat the brakes off of everybody by 14 plus. I hope that's the case. But if they do get punched in the mouth, how do they respond? We don't know. And I think that's what he's going for on this. And then it's cut up because, you know, that's a longer answer, but it's cut up a little bit on that. But I don't think it's like Ohio State sucks. I think it's, I don't know what's going to happen when they get punched in their mouth. And my guess is Ryan Day doesn't know either. He's probably got an idea, but it hasn't happened.
And I also think that's why he's been so hard on this team to make sure they don't get into that. Because you don't have, if you don't have to find out, don't find out. Just to borrow the phrase from the show, act accordingly. And you won't have to see if in a fourth quarter. But in the college football playoff, yeah, it's likely. The game on November 29th. Would anybody be surprised if that was a game going into the fourth quarter?
No.
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 So we'll see it. But as of right now, was it Booger McFarland on the Tuesday's rankings kind of did a similar they ain't played nobody take?
He did, and then McElroy goes, well, they played Texas.
And his like counter was, well, Texas A&M should be number one. And it's like, well, all right, here. And it just, it goes to the point I want to make that like ESPN is just, this is something not breaking news to anybody, but just going for the, let's get the viral take out there.
That's all our business is now.
Yep.
I can already hear it.
And you've angered Ohio State fans. Good job.
I hope that the game at the end of the year is not a game in the fourth quarter, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is going to happen because I don't believe it will, but I hope Ohio State blows them out and it's mm-hmm. not a game in the fourth quarter. But I can already hear the narrative. Well, Michigan was a one-dimensional team. They couldn't really throw the ball this year. Freshman quarterback. Mm-hmm. I can already hear all of the ESPN and national Fine. Pundits saying those things.
And it won't matter.
And you know what?
Not one bit.
Jimmy Crack Cornyn, I don't care. Because you think Nebraska, people are going, Cordell Stewart really couldn't throw the ball down the field that day. It was a cold day in Boulder. Nobody gives a damn. They won 44-21. Notice in 14 points of them. Here we are, 30 years later, me saying it's the best team I've ever seen because it's imprinted on my mind because I watched them play. And that's the exact same thing that can happen here if you continue to take care of your business. Tim May in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURN. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who?
Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Football Friday, 10:30. Time for a conversation with our good buddy Tim May, the Tim May Show, fanstreamsports.com, and of course, right here on The Fan. What did you do last Saturday?
I did the pregame tailgate show and then drove to at the casino and then drove to Purdue. And I would have been there a lot earlier if I hadn't gotten in two traffic jams. But, you know, when you're serving two masters... you have to do what you have to do sometimes. And
How long was the drive?
I make no apologies for it. 3 hours and something minutes.
Okay.
What really upset me was I was really making good time and then got in a big traffic jam and then got to know, but I still got there and watched the entire, I think it was late third quarter and then fourth quarter. So I saw enough of it. Of course, I was listening to, for some reason or another, you guys aren't on Sirius XM. Okay. I think it's because of Learfield, right? But anyway, so I was listening to Purdue side of things, and the Purdue play-by-play guy had a great line because there were a couple of spots there, I guess, early in the game where the officials missed a spot by like 2 yards. Mm-hmm. And the Purdue play-by-play guy, who's good friends with Paul Keel, said, well, when it's come to spotting, it's been a little – spotty so far. I will use that line somewhere along the way.
That's
go ahead.
A good one.
By the way, I don't know if you heard my question I asked Ryan Day on Wednesday about Mac Rhodes and what Mac Rhodes had to say about his team. You know what I mean? He was at that on Tuesday night still the committee chairman for the college football playoff committee.
What a circus.
Selection committee, and now he's not even athletic director at Baylor, I guess. Well, anyway, he's on leave, but how quickly things change, man. Crazy, isn't it?
Hey, speaking of questions to Ryan Day, I didn't hear your last question at the press conference on Tuesday. We carried it because it was at 11. Where was your question?
Oh, now that's another story. But the reason it was under 29 minutes, because I heard you talking about it, was mm-hmm. I check the press release every week just to know when the show with Skip and Paul and mm-hmm. Lachey and sometimes Cooper's on, and whether it's going to be Monday or Tuesday. That's when I quit reading. I didn't see the 11 a.m. part.
Were you
but I'm
in
more
route?
Than made up. I'm more than made up for it. Yeah, yeah, I was en route. So, dude, that's embarrassing. Is I'll get out. Except it's not. It's just an thing. It's just an example of a guy being in a routine. You understand what I'm saying? And when you're doing this for 42 years, you do get to a routine. But I'm more than made up for it.
I'm sure that you did. Do you know off the top of your head when the latest in a game this Ohio State team has trailed is, and what the and who the opponent was?
Well, it was a come from behind victory last week. As a matter of fact.
Yep.
So. Do I have it off the top of my head? Okay,
you just nailed it.
Yeah, it was Purdue.
It's Purdue.
they or as traded. I like to call it. And the SID over there one time gave me grief about this. Always after the first reference, I always shorten it to PU. But that is what it is. But yeah,
this is what. Yeah, so when I hear Ryan raising the grades for Champion, and I think about, I mean, they are 31.5-point favorites tomorrow against UCLA. After being 30-point favorites against Purdue, they're going to be 30-point favorites. There's only one game this year after Texas where they were favored by less than two scores, and that was at Washington. So this is a level of dominance combined with, you know, some of these programs that are normally decent being really bad. And so it's one of those things where, like, I led this off the top of the show today. I'm really not – I already know how this is going to go tomorrow, but what I'm trying to do is think about how it's going to go in 2 weeks. And I think that's the trick that Ryan is trying to do too. So when he raids the Champion grades, all this stuff, it's really like psychological jujitsu to get his team to believe that they're in harm's way and to keep them sharp.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, I'm telling you, Ryan, I've watched him evolve, man, as a head coach. Mm-hmm. I am so impressed. It's ridiculous. And, but it's almost like watching a director or orchestra director who starts off with a bang, you know, that the first overture, and he goes into it, and they've got this entire, you know, I don't know, Mozart, whatever, that they're going through, and he's directing it, bringing up the big sound when you have to, the staccato when you need it, you know, the flowing part, and all knowing that there's a big finish coming, and you want your team, you want your orchestra playing its best at the big finish, everybody on point to make a point. And it's really interesting because, you know, you saw, you know, last week when it revealed that, you know, when they did have the band in earlier, that was interesting. But the, one of the reasons was they don't want the band in on the week of the Michigan game. And the thing about it is, you can make too big a deal about a week, or you can make not enough of a deal about a week. Who knows until you play the game, right? Whether you've done it right, and that could be still a drop pass can kill you. But but the way he's playing this orchestra right now, I am quite impressed. I mean, just like when I asked him about what Mac Rhodes said about it, and he talked about how this team, you know, you can paraphrase, but they've won nothing yet, you know, right on down the line. They have to continue to get better. They have to continue to start bringing the volume up as the, for want of another term, of the orchestra, and be hitting the notes. And that's what you're being judged on, whether you hit the notes, not whether as a group y'all got to the end of the song, you know, and are you individually hitting the notes? Because the discord is obvious to anybody when you don't. I mean, but I just think back to last week, that was an extreme methodical victory at Purdue. Think about this. The first play of the game gets called back. It was that home run ball we've all been waiting to see one of the running backs hit. Boom, right? Jeremiah Smith blocks in the back. And ticky-tack, if you want to call it that. But the bottom line is it happened. And then also Julian Sain threw an interception in the red zone later. That's another touchdown. Really, the way I looked at it, that didn't happen. And otherwise, they just cruised past Purdue.
It could have been worse. Fashion. They were kind of monkeying around, Tim. I mean, we're handing it to tight ends inside the five. We're playing depth in the first quarter.
Well, they've done that before, though.
It could have been 51-7 if they wanted to. I thought
Roberts. Yeah,
they just could have taken the foot off the gas, though.
Yeah. But, dude, there's nothing wrong with throwing stuff out there, number one, to see if it'll work, and number two, to let the other team get ready for it. I've liked the variety Brian Hartline, and probably at the urging of Ryan, but the variety they've shown in the red zone, especially with that four tight end group, but not always the same lined up the same way. I mean, you know, the little, like I said, the little thing where Max Clair started inside, they had a tight bunch. He started inside at the snap. It looked like a power play inside, and all of a sudden he reversed field and ended up blocking a guy, ipso facto blocking a guy, and then Julian Sain completing the pass to Bennett Christian, for example, for a touchdown. These little quirks they've thrown in there, it's not just C.J. Donaldson off left tackle. And I've really liked the variety we've seen so far. And here's the thing. You know, there are other things off of that. And that's what I've always liked about the Ryan Day push for offense is if you have a concept, you have other plays other than the one you may show the first time. You have other levels you can get to. And that's what I'm saying. We haven't seen everything from this team yet, which is kind of crazy 9 games in.
Let me ask you this. Do you think if he was hooked up to a polygraph and you asked him, would you like to see some adversity for your team in the second half before Michigan? What do you think his answer would be?
I believe his answer would be no.
Okay.
But, you know, we've seen them at Washington. You know, they trailed late in that first half until they finally got the touchdown from Jeremiah Smith.
Dude, we're talking about second half.
Yeah.
Like just a second half struggle. They have none.
But the point is, they needed something then. They needed something in the first half to put their stamp on the game, and they got it. You know, so no matter where it comes, but no, you're right. But I don't think anybody, any coach in his right mind says he wants to be in a ball game late, middle of the fourth quarter.
Not middle of the fourth, even third.
Hey, closest we've seen to that is Texas, man. Texas, you know, had the ball. I mean, Texas had some chances there in the fourth quarter, and Ohio State defense stepped up. So that was a 14-7 game. So against what then was the number one team in the country, I think Ohio State already kind of answered that question that, yeah, if you want a fist fight, we're ready for it. So, but then again, that's been a long time ago. You're right. And, you know, but I don't think anybody goes looking for a fight.
No. You build up towards a game like that, and you have some, they just have had no second half adversity at all.
Yeah.
In months. Well, none.
Yeah. But you still got to go.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's all time stuff. Like, even the best teams in the history of the sport, 2001 Miami got punched in the mouth by Virginia Tech late in the season and then rallied and won the national title. Like, there hasn't been a single second half in question since Texas.
I guess, you know, but like, what impressed me last week is they got, you know, had the ball start the second half and then Julian threw the interception and then they came right back and just took care of business offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, here's the thing. When you press the gas, you know, does the car respond? I think anybody can say emphatically that this car responds. And the way the running game is coming on now, I give it up to Ryan and Brian. And if there's any, I'm not lying. I give it up to Ryan and Brian about the way they've stuck with the running game because they know they need it. I mean, you know, it was great talking to, you know, Clay Hall and I just recorded our Friday podcast here at the FanStream Studios up here on Bethel, and we were talking. You know, we finally got to talk to Bo Jackson again after the last several months. But I mean, the way that young man has come on, but also the way they've kept all four running backs in the mix, and some, you know, from a Dauber D-A-U-B-E-R standpoint, is interesting to me. I mean, because they're going to need these guys, and yeah. You never know how a team's going to respond until it does get backed into a corner, right? And so, but you don't go out looking for that fight either. I know how coaches think, you know?
No, of course
you
not.
Practice. You do that on Tuesday and Wednesday.
I don't think Tom Osborne in 95 was going, God, I wish we had a close game. He was fine.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that. And I remember Eddie George winning on Heisman in 95. And it was kind of like the last gasp for big time running backs, right? Because who was the kid at the quarterback at Nebraska?
Tommy Frazier.
Yeah. I mean, you could see the rise of the quarterbacks. Not that they weren't always important, but man, they've become so vital to what you do. It's kind of crazy to look at anybody else for that award because they do make or break a team now.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Good stuff as always. We'll do it again next week.
It is always a pleasure. You know that, Bo.
There he goes, the great Tim May right here on The Fan, The Tim May Show on FanStreamSports.com. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
All the 10 TV people come over to our side of the building to take a deuce. That should tell you something about how we operate. The Fan.
Progressive Insurance.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car? Maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Monday Night Football on The Fan. Catch the Lions and Eagles live from Philly. Fan coverage starts Sunday at 7:30.
Sponsored by Roosters, a fun casual joint.
Your radio home of the NFL, The Fan. Ohio sports destination.
Do you suffer?
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, from the corrections department, Hunter and Troy with this. The latest Ohio State trail was in the Washington game. I think I've been saying Purdue because it's the most recent latest they've trailed, but it was actually in the Washington game, into half, 3-0, down 3-0 at Washington with a minute 14 to go, saying then through the 18-yard touchdown play pass on the next play to go up 7-3 going into half. And then the closest, Troy, with this, the closest latest leads in the second half, 16-9 over Ohio with 7 minutes in the third, and 14-7 with a minute and a half left in the fourth against Texas. So those are the answers to that. But needless to say, it hasn't happened often. Time for a little thing or not a thing.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
For the first time in Major League Baseball history, which is a long time, we have back-to-back MVPs in both the American League and the National League. Dodger star Shohei Ohtani was a unanimous winner for his third straight MVP, two of them in the NL and fourth in the last 5 years. Only Barry Bonds has more MVPs, and Bonds was the only previous player to win three in a row. No other player in history has been voted MVP unanimously multiple times. Ohtani's been unanimous every time. In the American League, the vote was closer. Yankee slugger Aaron Judge received 17 first-place votes, compared to Seattle catcher Cal Raleigh's 13. It's Judge's second straight AL MVP. It's his third in the last 4 years. Thing or not a thing?
Okay, two things on this. Why do we have an AL and NL MVP?
Good question.
When we have a balanced schedule now. We play everybody. Why do we have... You've gotten rid of everything else. What's it? Why? Why keep doing this? So that jumps out. Number two, I just feel real. You guys, we've done the Ohtani thing a million times. He's the best player in the history of the sport. I feel really bad for the Seattle Mariners because they played in the ALCS. Cal Raleigh hit 60 home runs. He's probably never going to have a year like that again. They might not have another year like that again, and they have no hardware for it. He hit 60 home runs playing catcher. I'm sure statistically there's probably some advanced metric on base plus slugging and war that Judge is better than him at. But how in the hell is he not the MVP playing catcher hitting 60 home runs on a team that won their division? How did he not win it? What's the case for Judge, who's already won it a couple of times?
I think that the case for Judge was the batting average was much higher, and he was close to Raleigh and all the other stats as well. I think that's what it is there. Don't count out Cal Raleigh from doing this again, because I think a lot of people didn't think he could repeat what he did last year, and then he passed that. I'm kind of surprised that Judge did win it, though. Like, Ohtani, there was no one else in the National League to really rival him. Because I know a lot of times we get voter fatigue with these things. Mm-hmm. Like, Michael Jordan and LeBron could have won the MVP every year of their career, just about. But a lot of times they give it to other guys because it's just the expectation. You expect those guys to do that. In the National League, I don't think there was anyone really close to Ohtani. I'm kind of surprised that Raleigh didn't get it just because people were tired of voting for Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Huge thing, though, for both of these guys. It's just how damn good they are.
Mm-hmm.
Late Thursday afternoon, news broke that Steph Curry and Under Armour have parted ways. The parties mutually agreed to end their 13-year partnership effective immediately. Curry's going to maintain sole ownership of the Curry brand and is free to find another retail partner. Under Armour will release the Curry 13, which is the final Curry brand shoe with UA, in February. Under Armour CEO Kevin Plank said in a statement, quote, for Under Armour, this moment is about discipline and focus on the core UA brand during a critical stage of our turnaround. And for Stefan, it's the right moment to let what we created evolve on his terms. We'll always be grateful for what he's brought to the UA team, end quote. Thing or not a thing?
Maybe the first thing, first of all, it's a massive thing in youth basketball because this is one of the most popular shoes that you can't believe how many kids wear these. And my kids have worn them at times, and even if they don't like the looks of them, they're the most comfortable basketball shoes almost unanimously when you talk to kids. Like, they love the Curry basketball shoe. So that's the first thing that jumps out. The second thing that jumps out to me is maybe a reason that you're in trouble, Kevin Plank, is you're releasing basketball shoes in February. If you want kids to buy them, maybe release them in October so they can have them for their season. Because by February, everything on the youth level is done. Now, they have AAU that kicks up in March and into April, and maybe they're relying on that. But it feels to me like release the original shoe in October, release different colorways in March, and then you get two bites at the apple. You can wet your beak twice. It's a massive deal. I'm not sure where Steph can go. How many more years does he have left in him? I mean, does he finish at Nike or something like that? That'll be something to monitor. But it's a massive deal.
Or, Bo, how about releasing them in August before school starts?
There, too.
It's a lot of kids and parents buy all of that stuff before the school season starts. So, yeah, seems like a bad move there. The first thing I thought of when I heard this news, when I saw Reese put this in the prep, was New Balance.
Oh,
they seem to be going after everybody and getting the market. Steph Curry and the Curry brand heading over to New Balance. That's the first thing I thought.
Yeah, New Balance is a rocket ship, man. They're an absolute rocket ship over the last 5 years.
I wonder.
I just see with kids, like, I see what they're wearing.
Would New Balance want to say, like, a little too old?
Maybe. Maybe they could. It's also a wild, I mean, this is a bigger conversation just about Under Armour in general. They burst on the scene doing the impossible, which was breaking into the athletic marketing, the athletic apparel game, when it felt like it was impossible to do so by what? Base layers. Truly. Under Armour. That's what it was.
And then the turtlenecks for me.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money for Jordan Spieth. They paid a lot of money to Steph Curry. There's no question the Curry thing worked, but they were even in like the apparel game, like their official supplier of Navy. At one point they were, are they still
Maryland?
Maryland for sure, yeah. But Navy, Maryland, there were a handful of teams. I think they're less now. Looks like they're maybe trying to get back to their core, but now there's a lot of people in that space.
Did Texas Tech switch to them or from them this year?
I get confused because I know Adidas is on a real aggressive play right now. They got Tennessee back. They got Penn State back. Got Penn State. So I think I'm not sure exactly how all of that went.
Bo, I will say this. I can't speak for the Steph Curry basketball shoes, but Under Armour have become my favorite shoes, and I have more Under Armour shoes than I have anything else by far.
Yeah, the kids love them. I mean, the Curries they're where it's at. Final hour of the program coming up. Doug LeMaurie's coming up at 11:30. We will attempt to know the scores. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice has a large tattoo on his calf of LeBron eating a lion.
I have nothing else to say.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. Number one, Ohio State's a 31.5-point favorite. Buckeyes will host UCLA tomorrow night at 7:30. The all-time series is tied 4-4 with one tie. That was back in 1976. Bruins won the last meeting between the two teams, a 13-6 win over the Buckeyes back in 2001. We'll have tomorrow's game on The Fan with coverage Saturday at noon. In the Big Ten tonight, number 9 Oregon hosts Minnesota at 9 o'clock. In the NFL last night, Travion Henderson had 3 touchdowns to power the Patriots to a 27-14 win over the Jets. Week 11 continues Sunday morning. In Madrid, the Commanders play the Dolphins at 9:30. In college hoops, Ohio State's going to unveil a statue of Jerry Lucas at the Schottenstein Center today at 4 o'clock. Lucas will ring the victory bell tomorrow at the Shoe, and the basketball Buckeyes will host Notre Dame Saturday at 12:30. This update's sponsored by Germain Toyota, the best selection of new and used cars in Central Ohio. View their full selection of vehicles online at germaintoyota.net.
The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a football Friday. Buckeyes and Bruins tomorrow at the Shoe. Doug LaMaurice coming up in 28 minutes. Time now to know the scores.
It's time for Know the Scores on Bishop and Friends.
Sponsored by Buckeye Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
With college football picks thus far in the season, so far so good.
Yeah, I had an 8-3 last week, so I'm now 79-51, a robust 28 games over 500, picking 11 a week against the number. How about you, Bake? How'd you do last week?
I had another 6-5 week last week, so that puts me at 68-51 for the year. 17 games over 500.
That doesn't add up. If I'm 79-51, you can't be 68-51. 68-61?
I mean, I've been keeping this pretty closely here
I was
on my paper.
We got a math issue.
71-48 going into last week for me and was... Oh, no. You're right. It was 60. I was 63-45 last week, went 8-3. I'm 71-48.
Okay.
Good job out of you.
I thought we were pretty close because you overtook me finally last week. So I was like, how the heck is he that many games over 500?
No, I added another 8-3 onto it. So I'm 71-48.
I'm going to add another 8-3 on mine too then.
Can I add 20 games in the NFL?
Yeah.
No. That'd put me at 500, I think.
71-48.
You win a game. Everybody wins.
Just look under your seat. There's the win. Week 12 began Tuesday with a pair of Maction games, but you've got some Big Ten teams in action, a pair of them tonight. Number 8, Oregon hosts Minnesota at 9 o'clock. It's the Ducks, 25.5-point favorites.
So these are pretty brutal numbers in the Big Ten that you're having to navigate.
I think this whole week, these games you picked, this was not fair to us, Bo, because I feel like all of my picks are pretty darn close to the number.
Yeah. Here's one thing that I've noticed, though. When these teams go west to east in the Big Ten or east to west in the Big Ten, it's really tough. So I just think about the body clock for Minnesota playing at 9 o'clock Eastern. Their body clock would be 8 o'clock Central at night at Autzen. Oregon coming off of a tough win. I think Oregon does take care of this one and gets Cover City in this one. I think it probably doesn't happen until the fourth. I don't think they just run away from it. But I'm going to go Oregon 35-7.
So I think Oregon is going to have maybe a little bit of a letdown. Not much, but maybe a little bit coming off of that Iowa win. I think this Minnesota team is a decent team. I have Oregon winning pretty big, but not quite the number. I have Minnesota covering. It's Oregon 41, the Gophers 17.
Right on it.
Saturday at noon in Bloomington, number 2 Indiana is a 28.5-point favorite hosting Wisconsin. Big.
Every part of me wanted to say here that Indiana has a letdown after that win over Penn State. But Wisconsin, I think that win last week was more Washington being bad on the road than Wisconsin. I think Indiana wins and covers. I've got the Hoosiers 42-10.
Yeah, I wish there wasn't a hook on this in the biggest way. I wish this was 27.5 because it feels right at 28 to me, something like that. Luke has no quarterbacks. I don't know what he did to the quarterback gods, but every year he loses his quarterback at the start of the year. Last week they won with their leading passer being the punter. And I think last week was their Super Bowl. And knowing Cignetti a little bit, any sort of Mendoza Heisman chase that he wants to carry on, I think he leaves him in long in this one. So I got Indiana covering as well. I think it's pretty comfortable, 42-7.
Yeah, you've seen the Super Troopers where the mayor of the small town in Vermont gets the shotgun. He goes, spread it on, and then cocks it before they take the picture. That's Kurt Cignetti against Wisconsin tomorrow. At noon in the friendly confines of Wrigley Field, Northwestern and Michigan. It'll be on Fox. The 18th-ranked Wolverines are 11.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan's going to win. It'll be a home game for them. They're going to win the game. I think all of that, it goes without saying. But I don't think they're running away from anybody right now. I think this is kind of a gross one. I got Michigan winning this one. I'm going to give them 28. I'm going to give Northwestern 18.
Ooh. Pay attention.
Oh, we're pretty similar here. I have not picked Michigan to cover much this year. And Northwestern, I think, has been pretty decent with the spread.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michigan covers this one, though. I've got the Wolverines 27, the Wildcats 13.
At noon Saturday in College Station, number 3 Texas A&M is a 19.5-point favorite, hosting South Carolina, babe.
So Texas A&M, for most of this year, has played pretty close games. They have not played very close games the last 2 weeks, though, in their wins over Missouri and LSU. South Carolina has not played well this year record-wise, but they have played teams pretty tough. 19.5 is just a fuzz too big for me in this one, Bo. I've got the Aggies 31, the Gamecocks 13.
Yeah, I think we see it very similarly. I think can you imagine being Beamer and all, I mean, Lenora Sellers and all of the stuff that this was supposed to be for them. And here they sit here with 3 wins on the season in the basement of the SEC going to College Station. I see it so similar to you. I just think it's a little bit more. I'm going to do a live flip on air. I think Texas A&M wins 38-17.
At Acrisure Stadium tomorrow at noon, you've got the 22-ranked Pittsburgh Panthers. Do not care about this game at all, but they'll be hosting number 9 Notre Dame. It's the Fighting Irish, 12.5-point road favorites, Bo.
I think Notre Dame's going to win the game. I think that goes without saying. The question is do they pull away and cruise from Pitt? This is probably their last time to showcase anything. Their last 2 games are against Stanford and Syracuse. Syracuse at home and then at Stanford. I think they win by 2 scores. I'll throw the points. Give me the Irish 28-14.
So Pittsburgh is 5-0 with their new starting quarterback, the freshman from Oregon, Ohio.
Oregon, Ohio?
Yeah.
Is that what you just said?
You made that up. I think it's Oregon, actually, they call it. But
I'll be damned.
It's up near...
What school did he play for? What high school?
What is the... I have some buddies that...
Toledo Central Catholic.
Is it Clay? I think it's... I don't know where he went. I think there's a Clay high school
there. I see a Clay high school, the Oregon City Schools and Clay High School.
I actually have a couple buddies that went up that way. So, I think Pittsburgh... I think Narduzzi's doing something here. I think he's doing some kind of mental chess with his team, with his comments this week. I don't think this game's ever in doubt, but I think Pitt scores late to cover the spread. I've got Notre Dame 26, Pitt 17.
The Clay Eagles from Oregon, Ohio. 3:30 in Hollywood, number 17 USC is a 7.5-point favorite, hosting number 21 Iowa, Big.
Did we just skip some games?
No.
Oh, I just wrote it down different on my paper, I guess.
So you might have.
We're going Iowa, USC. Guys, you know I don't like USC. I think Iowa gets it done.
Oh, you're outright.
Give me the Hawkeyes, 28-27.
Yeah, I do like USC, and I do think that they handle business, and I do think that they win, but I do think that Iowa shows up and is in a fist fight for this one. I like USC winning this one, 28-21. 28-21.
Some are saying the U's back. College Football Playoff Committee had them in their bracket projection for week 2. The 15th-ranked Hurricanes are 14.5-point favorites, hosting NC State tomorrow at 3:30, Bo.
So the crazy thing about NC State is they have beaten Virginia and Georgia Tech, which is pretty wild that they've done that. In fact, they beat Georgia Tech last time out, 48-36. That's coming off the bye. I just think this number's a little too big. I don't know that Miami's this much better than anybody. I think Miami wins, but I'm going to live with that hook and go Miami wins at 31-17.
Bo, we have just about got this the same, except I've got
a lot of these. I've got it.
A fuzz higher in the score. I've got Miami 41, but NC State covering by the 0.5, 27.
So we both had that the same then. We both have NC State covering.
14 points, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
That 0.5. I keep thinking about Thursday night football.
Dude, it's diabolical what they've done with the hooks this
year. Go to hell,
college and pro. Oh, my God. It's diabolical.
Now, here's another 0.5. Alabama, 5.5 point favorites. Hosting Oklahoma tomorrow at 3:30.
I think Bama's better. I like this Oklahoma team a lot, though. I think both of these teams usually play close games. I'm kind of surprised I'm doing this, but I have Bama covering this one. I've got it 27-20 tied.
Yeah, I think what Alabama's done from a schedule standpoint is absolutely absurd, what they have done and who they've played and how they take care of business. And I don't know how they keep doing it each week, but they do. And I think they do this week as well. I think it's right on it, though. I'm with you. I got Bama covering just barely 24-17.
Or 7 o'clock. That was going to be a 3:30 game, but it is at 7 p.m. tomorrow. Baylor, who's had a week, hosts number 13 Utah. It is the visiting team, the Utes, 9.5-point favorites for this game in Waco.
I remember at the beginning of the year, I really liked Baylor. I really liked the look of that team and Sawyer Robertson and kind of everything that they are about. But when they play teams where the talent equates for them, it has not gone well. And that starts with the opener against Auburn. I think big week for Utah. They continue to be ranked really high. Their athletic director moves on to the college football playoff committee panel as well. And I think they reward a little bit. I like Utah by 10 in this one, 11, 35-24.
Seems so long ago, Bo, that you were on that Baylor train. The college football playoff committee likes Utah. I do too. Utes 35, Bears 20.
At 7:30 Saturday, number 5, Georgia is a 6.5-point home favorite, hosting number 10, Texas, Bake.
There's every part of me that wants to say Texas wins this game outright. I'm not going to do that, though, because it is in Athens. Texas keeps it close, though. I got the Bulldogs, 31, Longhorns, 27.
Yeah, and I think Texas's defense is pretty dang good. I know they've given up some points to Mississippi State and Vanderbilt last couple of times out. But with a week off to get healthy, to get right, I think this is a really competitive game, too. This would be an elimination game for the Horns. It would be. And I do think they will be eliminated. But I like Georgia close, 24-21.
And, Baker, you said Athens. Yeah, the dumb Athens.
That's my bad. I forgot who was the other friend on this show.
That mattered.
The other 7:30 game we'll pick, we'll do that at the end of the program. Ohio State and UCLA Buckeyes, 31.5-point favorites.
That was like just self-punishment, me picking those 11. I mean, some of those are
really
just brutal.
You masochist, you.
I know it. We got it. Hey, the standard is the standard, boys. We were picked the best 11 games every single week. That's the job. What do you expect the Buckeyes to do?
Don't let the intensity drop in practice, Bo.
That's right. The grading of a champion. Got to go at least 8-3 to be graded a champion around here. Buckeyes going to be graded champions. The question is by how much and how comfortable and how do they go about their business? We'll get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Your new Columbus home for the Jim Rome Show is The Fan 2.
Catch the live experience weekdays from 3 to 6.
Just one requirement, have a take and don't suck. The Fan 2, Columbus's home of the Jim Rome Show. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly cloudy skies are expected here for your Friday as temperatures warm up into the upper 50s here for this afternoon. Winds fairly light at about 5 to 10 miles per hour. And then as we head into the weekend, we're tracking even warmer temperatures here for Saturday with highs in the mid-60s. But mostly cloudy skies are expected and a chance for rain showers here as a cold front arrives as we head into the evening. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Have you already started your tailgate? Us too. It's Football Friday.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. The friends are the guests and listeners. Reeser and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
such a unique season for UCLA. They open with Utah, get bombed 43-10. Then they're at UNLV and lose 30-23. Then they lose to New Mexico, 35-10. Then they lose at Northwestern, coaching change, beat Penn State, ranked 7th in the country at the time, 42-37. Win at Michigan State, 38-13. Nice little story. Head to Maryland. I'm sorry, Maryland goes to out to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, wins 20-17. And then they go at Indiana and get bombed 56-6. And it feels like Cignetti just took their masculinity with them. Like, that was just kind of it at that point. They did give a yeoman's effort against Nebraska, playing a backup, a true freshman quarterback for the Huskers in a 28-21 win loss last week. And now we see them tomorrow night. It is 31.5 is the number on this, and for good reason. And so from the Buckeyes' perspective, the bigger challenge that the offense has probably faced is going to be in practice this week when they went good on good. You ought to be able to matriculate the ball down the field. I do think Ryan is working towards building. What Ryan is doing, I think, every single week is preparing for Michigan and Indiana and the playoff. And so one of the things that he's kind of shortened up a little bit is that running back rotation. Here is Coach Day on that.
I think CJ, you're seeing, you know, is a little bit more of a role, but he can do everything as well. You've seen him do that. I mean, they all can do it all, but there are certain things that each guy does a little bit better than others, and sometimes we'll try to do that, but it doesn't always work that way. You know, sometimes the plays in, you know, we don't have time to get it all organized that way. And plus, there's a rhythm that you have to play with, and I think to get, you know, the right guy in the right spot every single play, you know, it's a lot of manipulation and slows the game down. So we want everybody able to do, you know, everything. But at the same time, there are certain things that guys do better than others that we'll try to make sure we emphasize.
You know, I wonder if Ryan, in the chase of perfection, in terms of execution, all of it, does that lead to maybe not seeing as much depth in these blowouts as we'd like? And again, we're just looking for things here, but he's going to give a question. They ask him a question about wide receiver depth. And we really, even with Carnell out, you just fed it to Jeremiah a lot more. So it wasn't like they were spinning Carnell's Tate's looks anywhere else. It basically just went to four. And he was asked about that wide receiver depth and if there's cause for concern there. Here's his answer.
I felt like, you know, Mylan, first off, he had an opportunity early in the game, didn't come through, but now he's got to respond to that. You know, now we're in the game. And so he came back with a catch later in the game, so that was a bright spot. Bryson Rogers graded out, which was great. You know, he had some good blocks, had two nice catches. You could see the route running ability there. So hopefully his confidence is increasing because we need him. And also hopefully, you know, he can help us on special teams as well. And so that'll be really important for us, you know, and so what a great opportunity for him. To step up and you know, help us out there. And so we're hoping to get Quincy back this week as well. So, again, hopefully to get more and more depth in that room.
You put any credence to that?
Yeah, I think the depth's fine. I keep going back to that Mylan Graham. I mean, the throw was right mm-hmm. on the money. It's like five, you got to catch that. And I also think, like, last week, if it wasn't Jeremiah, and, you know, you talked about, you know, Mylan, obviously, and Bryson. They handed the ball off to a tight end. So they're trying to get everybody involved, but they did try a lot to Max Clair. Because I think Julian had him that he kind of overthrew Clair in the back of the end zone. I think mm-hmm. it was late in the third quarter, maybe, but, or no, the fourth quarter. They only had one drive in the third. So I think they tried to do both, if that makes sense, to get guys that needed reps, that kind of reps, but also understanding Jeremiah's needs to eat. And I think that's so difficult to do every single week because all the games are different. And so, like, you kind of can't, from one week to the next, figure out how it's going to go. It just, once you're in it, then I think you get a better sense. But it has to, I think, it's just so, he's the engine, really, is Jeremiah, this offense.
I do think with the wide receiver depth, it may not be as good as we all thought. We saw Brandon Ennis obviously have more of a presence in the game last week. Max Clair, obviously, they hit him a lot with Carnell Tate out. I know he's been hurt a little bit, but sometimes, as we talked about, you just watch something and you see something and it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Bryson Rogers' acceleration is different. I don't know, like, if his top end speed is there. I don't know exactly about his route running and all of that. I can't break all that down. But I will say he's got a gear out of the chute that's mm-hmm. just different. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see that utilized a little more somehow, some way.
Yeah, I think your first point is on point when you talk about maybe this isn't quite as deep and great as we've been accustomed to, which is the deepest and greatest ever. Like this stretch of wide receiver play, no university, even LSU, hasn't put anything out like what Ohio State's put out the last decade receiver-wise.
Let's also remember no Quincy Porter last week, and I think he's a guy as a true freshman that's really coming on, and I think they kind of think maybe he's the next to take the mantle. That was that kind of stunk that he was out last week and couldn't chip in a little more with Tate out.
It's also super unfair because Jeremiah Smith didn't walk onto campus. He like was beamed down from a spaceship.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice having Predator on your team.
Nobody like him.
No. Uh-uh. On the other side of the ball, I do think at least this is different from last week and next week in that the kid taking snaps is a dude. Like, they mismanaged the end at Tennessee very clearly. Him and his pops, they mismanaged it in a very, very big way. I'm sure if you could have it back, he would, and he'd still be the quarterback at Tennessee and all the stuff that comes with that. But we saw him here in a playoff game, and we know the guts the kid has. I was really impressed with the way that he stood in there in a game that was an absolute waterfall beatdown for Tennessee, and he took hit after hit after hit and kept getting up. Here's Ryan Day on Nico Amaliava.
He's a tough player. He played tough in the playoff game here. You know, I'm watching him play the last few weeks, and man, he's physical. He runs hard. He takes some shots, and he keeps coming back. And he's a competitor, man. I got a lot of respect for him as a player. He throws. He's got a strong arm, and you know he's been doing a lot for his team. And you watch him on the field; he's a warrior. You know, we'll take all that into consideration. Just you know, and look at everything, but we know this is a great challenge for our team, and. You know, it starts with him.
Where is he playing quarterback next year?
For the Columbus Aviators.
I was going to say the CFO. I can't go.
He's only a sophomore. I mean, he could go. He's played.
He's a redshirt, right?
He's a redshirt sophomore. Yeah, this is his third year, but he's got years of eligibility left. He's third year college, and he's still a sophomore grade-wise. He could play two more years of college football.
I think he's still on the West Coast.
I think he's at Oregon.
I was thinking that too.
Dante goes pro.
Yep.
He paratroops into Eugene. They can pay. That's the one that jumps out to me. Like, I could see him being the quarterback at Oregon next year. I don't think he'll be at UCLA. I don't see that in any way, shape, or form. Doug LaMaurice in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
A fan guest hotline is sponsored by Carpenter Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electric, and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and Friday at 11:30 we talk with our good buddy Doug LaMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube, Substack, Bill and Doug on Ohio State Football, and Bill and Doug OSU.substack.com. Dan Orlovsky, I'm sure you've seen it. Most untested number one team maybe ever. He might be right. What did you make of the comments, and what does it mean, if anything?
Yeah, I don't think he's right. Was it Georgia when they were going for their third where they didn't play anybody for the first 9 weeks? They played a couple ranked teams down the stretch. It's this battle of, I don't know, like I thought Illinois was going to make the playoffs this year. Illinois is going to win 9 games. Washington's going to be an 8 or 9 win team. Those don't count. Texas is number 10. That doesn't mean anything. First, I disagree with it. And second, if that's your conversation around Ohio State, I think you're missing more interesting conversations. You know, because this is different than Indiana last year, right? Like, Ohio State played the number one team to open the season. And that number one team is now number 10, right? So, I think he's wrong. So no, I don't agree with any of it. And I think if Ohio State was an SEC team, were we sitting around talking about the Saban teams being like, man, they haven't played anybody. My number one take on the defending national champ number one team is they haven't played anybody. That's not how we talked about Alabama. So So why are we doing it with Ohio State?
Yeah, I think there's a I'm going to meet you in the middle on it, because I think he's right. They haven't. I mean, the last time that they trailed late in a game was last drive against Washington. They were down 3-0. This team has not trailed in a game in the second half. So there's some semantics at work here, right? From the sense of, are we suggesting, is the suggestion that they haven't played anybody more prominent than the reality of they've dominated who they've played? And that's the right. That's the twist. If you think of the greatest teams of my lifetime, 95 Nebraska, 2019 LSU, and 2001 Miami, those teams always had a little scare somewhere along the lines, with the exception of 95 Nebraska. They won out. And that's the thing for Ohio State. If you win out, no one's going to remember any of it. They're going to say this is the greatest team in the history of college football if you win out. So I think that's kind of the thing with it. The one thing that is very real is you're 4 touchdown favorites every week. And that's tough. And that's a Big Ten problem, Doug, because there's 3 games this week that are 25 points or more favorites in the Big Ten. There's no such game like that in the SEC this week. And that's Vegas. That's not bias.
That's the bottom 5 in the Big Ten are pretty bad, right? When we're talking about Purdue and Wisconsin and Michigan State and Rutgers and that kind of thing. I think part of it is that the top of the Big Ten is also so good that that it exacerbates the how big the point spreads are, right? And so a part of it is the quirk of scheduling. We get Texas, Georgia this week. We get Alabama, Oklahoma this week. Oklahoma's a mess. John Mateer has been bad since he came back from the injury, and and it's unfortunate he got injured. He's been bad since he got back from the injury. Bama's less than a touchdown favorite against Oklahoma. Like, what would Ohio State be against Oklahoma? I think Ohio State be favored by 14 against Oklahoma. So then what is that? Like, so there's part of this, Bo, that I think the strength at the top of the Big Ten, the overall, what I think the SEC is overrated, and somehow we spin it into a strength for the SEC, just because I think Minnesota's a half decent team and Oregon's favored by 24 points. So is it a Big Ten problem, or is it a sign that Oregon's pretty darn good? I think it's partly a Big Ten problem, but I also think it's part the other thing too that we have to talk about.
Yeah, I think you hit it. I think it's both that the Big Ten's best are better, and we'll find out how this all plays out. Last couple of years, it's played out that is correct, are better than the SEC's best, and also that the bottom of the SEC is much better than the bottom of the Big Ten, and that's where you get some of this stuff. I tell you what Minnesota needs to do, like if they want the real respect, they need to play competitively tonight at Oregon. I mean, the Big Ten needs more of that. They need Minnesota going out there and playing tough. Then you'd be like, okay. This is not an Ohio State problem. I don't even think it's really an Indiana problem anymore. And it's not an Oregon problem. And USC falls in this mold too. They need to play well against Iowa on Saturday.
But if Minnesota plays Oregon tight, is the conversation going to be, boy, I'll tell you what, Minnesota's a pretty good little team, or is it going to be Oregon's overrated?
Because it's 25.5, you know it's going to be the latter.
So, but if it was the SEC, I think it'd be the opposite, right? Like, that's the thing. This is the thing that I think.
Do you think it gets fixed over time, though? Right, Doug? Like, you need to have competitive stuff.
Yeah,
you need you couldn't have Illinois and Wisconsin fall on their face again. They needed to be better.
So Iowa played competitive 1-touchdown games with Indiana and Oregon, right? Iowa pushed them to the wall. Iowa's going out to play USC. Like, I don't know. Does the SEC think Iowa's good? I don't know. I think they're a good defensive team, right? And their quarterback's slightly more competent than it's been lately. So again, what does that mean? So that's an example of a competitive game. Texas is a top 10 team. Texas played overtime games with Mississippi State and Kentucky. Does that mean that the bottom of the SEC is good? Or does that mean that a team that's number 10 in the country and one of the best teams in the SEC is actually pretty mid? What are we supposed to take away from that? Like, I don't necessarily mean that I don't necessarily think that means the bottom of the SEC is better than the bottom of the Big Ten just because Kentucky almost beat Texas.
Yeah,
Kentucky
I think
stinks.
You're Iowa, but then we're also saying Texas stinks, and so that's tough for us, right? The one thing that's interesting, I think that Iowa staying in the poll was a big deal.
I agree. That was that they dropped what one spot. Losing at Oregon at home on it, like that's how that should be evaluated.
Right? I agree. Like, so I think they got that right.
I do think they got that right. And also, and some guy in the South wrote a column that Oregon's overrated, and I've been trying to get to it all week to write my rebuttal. I will at some point. Oregon goes on the road in a really tough place to play in a downpour without their three best pass catchers and their right tackle. And they find a way to win because their talented quarterback makes an unbelievable throw on the last drive to win. Like, so Oregon stinks, right? We'd be having a freaking parade if an SEC team did that, right? So, like, this is the thing I you're right with a lot of the things you're saying. But the thing that gets my hackles up is that I feel like the conversations about the same type of games, the same type of discussions, they're different when it comes to the SEC and the Big Ten. And that I think a continuing issue. It doesn't mean that we don't need more Big Ten teams to rise up. But also, Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon are really good. Penn State was supposed to compete for a national title and fell off a cliff. Michigan lost to Oklahoma playing a freshman quarterback, but they've gotten better over the course of the year. USC has the most efficient offense in the country. Like, there are some defenses in the Big Ten that'll push you to the brink. Like, I do think there's still some stuff in the Big Ten.
What do you make of the, I called this psychological jiu-jitsu that Ryan is pulling on his team? Champions grade's now 83. The practices during, I mean, these guys aren't idiots. Yeah. They see 31.5. Next week's going to be 30. Last week was 30. He's not playing UCLA tomorrow. He's playing his own standard, and he's building to Michigan.
Yeah, no, and I think it's good. Like, I think the idea that there's just so many of these guys who were not starters last year, and that you haven't won anything. You know, that team won something. This team hasn't won anything. I don't think anybody is bored. And I had Joshua Perry on the Bill and Doug show this week, and we were talking about this. He was saying, like, that 15 team that tried to repeat, it was all the same guys. Mm-hmm. And they weren't as locked in. Like, this group is locked in, and if they take one step off the path, Ryan Day's pulling them right back on the path. So, like, I think all of this matters, and I think it is a sign of a team with Arvel Reese and Carnell Tate and Austin Saraveld and guys like that who are stepping up, and also, just to me, a head coach who has his finger on the pulse of his team in a way that shows you he's got his control of this whole thing top to bottom.
People want to use the Urban comparison to him. He sounds like Saban to me this year.
We've said Saban 10 times. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
It's hyperbole. It's like, oh, who's he remind you of? I don't know, the greatest coach ever. Like, that's not what we're talking about. He doesn't use the phrase rat poison.
No.
But I do think he does it with more of a smile. Mm-hmm. Saban was so grumpy. Like, I don't think Ryan Day's grumpy.
Nope.
But I don't think he's locked in, and he's, like, you try to bring up anything, you say anything about them being good, and he's like, no. Right? And so, but I do think, and it's not just talk, I think the thing, I thought it was a big deal that they moved the band out of Michigan week. Like, I think that is a big deal. Like, they are making logistical tweaks to give them the best possible chance to win. And then, by the way, they have a bunch of good players.
Yeah. And the crazy thing with all of this, and this is the thing that's got to be so strange with him, he's the national champion. He's chasing immortality in terms of back-to-back national titles and an undefeated 16-0, all of this stuff, which has never been done. But if it's 2 weeks that we're all eyeing, right? So it's just this crazy thing that we're building towards while playing these overmatched opponents in the month of November.
Like, has there ever been a coach or a team in a situation where they've been simultaneously the ultimate success and a failure at the same time? And like, they, like, losing four straight to Michigan is a failure. That's not a controversial statement. It really matters. But they're also the best team in the country for 2 years in a row. Like, it's wild. It is It is two exact opposite, 180 degree opposite things happening simultaneously up until the point when they get that win on the last Saturday in November, and then that'll be gone. But until then, two opposites at the same time.
It's wild, wild. Well done, buddy, as always. Look forward to it every single week. Thanks for your time.
I'll talk to you soon, man.
There he goes. Doug Lee-Maurice, The Bill and Doug Show on YouTube. Bill and Doug, OSU.substack.com. Three things to a Buckeye victory coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is the Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Light Auto Glass. You talked this week in your press conference about the versatility of players playing different positions. How does that help as far as, you know, the need occurs?
Well, I feel like it's always been important, but I think as we move forward with, you know, the roster size getting decreased, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, guys can do multiple things, which is going to help us with our depth. And you know, I think over the days, you know, unless you're just a really elite player, you know, you have to be able to do multiple things for us, and that includes on special teams. So we're going to look at that and evaluate that when we're going through our process.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment. Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
At Ohio State, we are the never afraid to innovate teams and the improve people's lives teams. Together, we are the Ohio State University.
Ryan, and talking about versatility of playing different positions, when you're recruiting somebody, is it difficult, or are you able to see somebody that can maybe fill a couple of different needs once they get to this level?
Well, I think we have to do a good job on our evaluation because, you know, for instance, if you look at a running back and he may be in a certain offense in high school but doesn't really, you know, catch punts or catch kickoffs, you know, you don't know, can he track a ball? Can he catch the ball? How about his ball skills out of the backfield when maybe they don't really utilize the running backs in the passing game? Like, all those things come into play. But then once you get into college, you know, now we're asking you to do those types of things. So it's our job to make sure that, you know, we're asking those questions or getting them into camp to evaluate things like that. And that's it at multiple positions, you know, about corner, you know, coming in inside and playing, you know, nickel, or, you know, somebody who can then get moved to safety but has to have the ball skills and the wherewithal to be able to play a half of the field and things that come with that. So, you know, it's our job to evaluate that and make sure that, you know, when these guys come in here, they have the skills in order to do the job.
Okay, this is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Progressive Insurance.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus, with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
This time of year, it's all or nothing, and Toyota's got all you need during Toyota Truck Month. Now through December 1st, get 2.99 APR financing on remaining new 25 Tacomas. Excludes TRD Pro and Trail Hunter. Or lease a well-equipped 25 Tacoma SR5 for $259 a month for 39 months with $39.99 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS. Tax, title, and license extra. Call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details or go to toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
I think I said this last week when we were picking the game against Purdue, and I said, we're going to blink, and it's going to be UCLA, and it's going to sound exactly the same, and we're going to just get to Michigan. It's you know, we got two in between. So what do you got in the poll today, Reese?
The Daily Fan poll is mighty presumptuous, asking, how big do the Buckeyes win by against UCLA? 7 or less, 8 to 14, 15 to 21, 22 or more. 57% say 22 or more. 38% say 15 to 21 points.
Why did they not have 31 or more?
Good question. Great question. Great question.
Really good question by you.
Yeah, I think you need to have 32 or more.
This had to be Thidoff. Had to be Thidoff.
He's not doing the fan poll.
Had to be. It's their show.
I understand the show, but he ain't doing that.
Had to be Thidoff.
You could ask him to do it, and he still just wouldn't.
Just stare at you blankly.
Yeah. They're not making Big Mo, the new guy, do it today, so...
This probably is Thidoff. You might be right. All right, three things to a Buckeye victory. Hit it, guys.
One, two.
Three things.
Sponsored by Buckeye Lake Marina, Central Ohio's largest selection of new and pre-owned boats. Find your next dream boat at BuckeyeLakeMarina.com.
There we go. Come on. Come on now.
That put you in a good mood, didn't it?
That put you in a good spot. Number one for me. This is a sunny Arvel game to me. They've been exemplary all season long. I'm guessing you're going to get an Arvel is number 8 tweet from me at some point in the first quarter of this one. Why? Because Nico Amaliyeva is a really good player. And he likes to scramble and he likes to run. And he's a big dude who can make people miss. He's pretty shifty. I think both of those guys have massive games tomorrow and really eat. And I think when we get to the end of this, I wouldn't be surprised if they have tables tomorrow by the time this thing is done tomorrow night. I expect a big game out of both of those guys.
Yeah, I want the clamps. UCLA has not been shut out this season. I don't necessarily know if that continues tomorrow. And I think UCLA is going to move the ball. But I also think when you get down to that red area, Ohio State continues as the best red zone defense in the country. Also interesting that I think we're coming back Monday and going to be asking, there are going to be portions of the fan base that are going to say there wasn't a pass rush, but I think that'll be by design.
First thing for me, Nico's Nightmare, part two, the sequel. Featuring co-starring actors Matt Patricia and Arvel Reese. Participating actors Caleb Downs, Caden McDonald, Sonny Styles, Peyton Pierce, Kenyatta Jackson, Caden Curry. Make him remember exactly why he never wanted to come to the Shoe again. And just beat him up like you did last year against Tennessee.
So funny. I have this like in my head that he played his rear end off. Basically, he was just courageous. He actually was terrible. He was 14 of 31 for 104 in the playoff game. He ran 20 times for 47. But because he got up and kept fighting, he gets respect.
Yeah,
I don't think we ever said he had a great game. I think we said he played his ass off.
I do think that some people have changed. Like they almost, because he played so hard, they think that he played well. He didn't play well. He played hard. For sure. Look, number two for me, it's just the only beef you kind of have. It's just red zone, short red zone. I just think touchdowns, not field goals. I think last week against Purdue, you kind of took a little bit of a step back with some of the gadget stuff. Let's just put it in the paint, man. Just put 6 on the board every time. Handle your business down there and find some sort of rhythm. If it's going to be that bison package, fine. Then maybe not hand it to a tight end. Hand it to one of the backs. Find a way to be successful. But touchdowns, not field goals in the red zone for the Bucs.
It's been since the Wisconsin game, Ohio State's won the turnover battle. So let's change that tomorrow. Clean it up. when you're in the red area. Don't turn the ball over either at your 20 or their 20 because both are equally bad. And maybe get a pick or two. Like, let's win the turnover battle here tomorrow. And I think you'll have a lot of fun in the second half.
Reeser, that's why you're the best friend on this show, because that was a great stat right there with the turnovers. Second thing for me, we saw Bo Jackson break one last week. It got called back, though, because of a Jeremiah block in the back. Bo, let's break another one this week. Maybe two. Why not? Yeah. Be greedy.
Yeah, this last one is for the fans. Night games are rare around here now. Enjoy it. I think we're having a nice night. You're going to get all the spectacle that comes with the night game. The horseshoe at night is as good as anything. Even if this game is not competitive into the third and fourth quarter, first quarter, second quarter, be on your best. Make that place deafening. Make it loud. You got two more opportunities to watch this team play. My hunch is next week is going to be noon. That's my guess. So this is probably going to be your last one and certainly your last night game. So live, damn it. You don't get many of them.
I would like for Ohio State's offense to put this game away in the third quarter so that in the fourth, you could bring out Lincoln Kienholz and have him run the full complement of Ohio State's offense. At least for a drive or two of, like, meaningful offense. Please, I ask this of you.
Reeser, my final thing is very similar to yours. I actually have a feeling, I don't know why, Ohio State is going to come out with their foot on the gas this week. Mm-hmm. And I think they are going to get up decently, and I do think we will see backups fully in the fourth quarter. For that reason, I do not have Ohio State covering, but I still have them winning very comfortably. I have the Buckeyes 41, the Bruins 13.
I got Ohio State winning 45-3. Not only are they in Cover City, but they're looking over at Indiana saying, yeah, they scored more on you.
I think we're all kind of in the same boat with this thing. 40s to not much is kind of how we think it's going to go. I do think that the Purdue kind of, oh, we got this, we're good. I think you are going to see pedal to metal. I think you're going to reward the fans that are there at night, and I think they're going to be pretty electric right out of the gates. I don't see UCLA scoring more than 10 at most. I see the Buckeyes scoring 45 at least, something like that. So I think it is Cover City. I'm going to go 42-7, the final Cover City for the Buckeyes. Either way, we'll be back on Monday to break it all down. Rothman and Ice, keep the fun going. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We've been your Jackets flagship station since day one. All the goals, all the action, all the memories. Your home for the Columbus Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.